Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Guido de Pasile, the General Secretary of Solidarity. With me is Leon Visser, Deputy General Secretary. As Chairperson, I've been coming here for 10 years, and every time I get the same criticism, so I think I must start with it, because there's always a gender and a race-related matter that I need to deal with. So first of all, I can tell you that Leon, since he became Deputy General Secretary, he believed, like our President, that there must be a 50-50 gender split, and that's how he appoints his team members, and we recently promoted the Head of Health and Safety. Also, we've got now women in that position, so that at least I can say. But regarding the race matter, luckily it's a new committee, so they don't know which commitments I made earlier. But what I can promise you, if you invite us again, we will address some of those matters. But I promise you, I will have a wider approach, not a wider approach, in my presentation, Chair. Chair, you've got the presentation in front of you. So what we basically will deal with is a few opening remarks, the state of labour relations, the mining charter, health and safety, a SWOT analysis, concluding remarks, and then raise a few expectations we have for this portfolio committee. And I also take note of previous comments you made regarding the way we should present. Now, to start off, we are saying that the mining industry is a microcosm of South African society. So despite the fact that everybody sitting in this room and all the other participants, you'll have, regardless of ideology, race, gender, whatever, political party, union, affiliation, we have one thing in common, the jobs that we're doing is the mining industry. So obviously we are all social partners, but what we then also say, why the mining industry is such, is so important, that for it being the microcosm of South African society, the challenges that you find in the South African society is exactly the same challenges you face in the mining industry. So that's why it's so important mining solutions can also be a blueprint for South African solutions. But we say we're also at the crossroads. We know we've been overtaken by Ghana, who's the biggest gold producer in Africa. They have six times less gold reserves than we have. And we've also, in mining the rankings, we have dropped. So we say what we require is a balance between what's the employee interest, employer interest, government interest, union interest, community interest, investor interest, sustainability. We need to have that balance and move away from self-interest. Now, being a unionist, that's why I want to also focus a little bit on labor relations and say the one negative thing, and there are a lot of positives that I can also highlight, is that we still sit with very violent strikes. And we're sitting with a situation that there's a weakness in our constitution. Your constitution protects the right to strike, but not the right not to strike. And we're faced with a situation after every violent strike, you know, destroy social cohesion, relationships, and obviously families, because there are also deaths that go with it. So we say the price is too high. Then what we also find is when dealing, we actually envy Parliament. You can become a member of Parliament and placed here as a member of Parliament if you represent even less than 1% support that you've got through the elections. But union or industrial democracy or workplace democracy doesn't work like that. You need, most cases, 50% plus one representation to be recognized as a union, or if you are 30%, you'll have a lot less privileges. And we say, but we need to bring this undemocratic majoritarian principle in line with political democracy, where we all have a say. We see it in NEDLAG, you know, where it's also the representation is disproportionate, and it's not representative of the mine, the unions in South Africa. And then we say, but there was a framework agreement that the unions, together with business and government, signed in 2013, where we said we need to address this majoritarian principle, because there was a time for it, and now every single trade union in the mining industry is occasionally a minority union, and we need to address it. Then we also notice unity is at an all-time low. We find it often, we see wage negotiations, how the employers will have the infighting, we see collective bargaining being destroyed, and we've lost that sense of oneness. So labor relations is not a good state. But what is happening is there's an increase in union coalitions, where trade unions will enter into coalitions to combat thresholds, disputes, or threats. So that's at least one positive, and maybe on another day I can also assist, we as unionists can assist with some of the lessons we've learned how to make a coalition work. But we've also seen there's a reluctance from workers to sometimes enter into a strike because there's the realization you can strike yourself out of the job. And I will tend to it a little bit later. And one of the areas that we can control in the mining industry is labor relations. So we say, we as unionists, we need to rise above our differences, and if we can bring labor relations under control, it will also assist with a few other elements of tension that I will highlight later. The next item on the mining charter. Now, the mining charter is very important because it deals with the mining industry's past, current state and the present state and the future. And for employers, we've been saying throughout the mining charter negotiations, the way that they should look at the mining charter, it's not a cost, it's an investment in peace and stability. And that's why what we refer to as the Montashe version, that's Minister Montashe version, is much better than the previous version of previous former Minister Zwane. So that's a positive. We've also seen that balancing act regarding race and gender and the move to non-racial sector. We had this debate you've referred earlier about class and ideology, where we said, you know, at a specific level, at your junior levels, there should not be a differentiation between race. There are specific things like, for instance, ownership, and we employees can deal in ownership benefits in terms of carried interest, that there should not be any racial differentiation. We do acknowledge the history, we do acknowledge what happened in the past, but that's the one thing we managed to achieve with the charter in that regard. Then we also say that the employee share ownership model proposed in the charter is much better. To give you an example, we had the Desano Trust trust meeting last week. Desano Trust is the trust, the ESOP trust for Goldfields and Sibanye. The company with great joy announced that dividends will be paid to workers of 27 rands. 27 rands is what the trust will pay. 3 years ago, it was 221 rands. So it means that the ESOPs that we currently have in place have failed, and therefore we will push employers to start to move to the model that's now in the charter, because it will only kick in when they apply for a new mining license, to say that the current trust does not work. And that's a positive that the charter assists us with. The negative thing is this ongoing litigation around once in power, always in power. And as much as most probably all of you are aware, Solidarity do represent mainly white employees. And despite the fact that we're getting criticized for a focus on that, we're also conscious to the fact that we can't understand that when a company has achieved the empowerment targets, that if the black entrepreneurs or the black shareholders withdraw after that specific period, that the company thereafter can be lily white. It's simply, you cannot understand and see that happening, and that's why we say, even from Solidarity side, we're highly critical of that specific litigation process that is taking place. And then we say there's a major lost opportunity to establish co-determination in terms of representativity on company boards. And there was also an opportunity lost to implement what the academics refer to as social co-determination. Social co-determination is when communities also sit on company boards. And that's what we are hoping, if there's going to be a charter form or amendments, and I will deal with it later, that we address some of those specific issues, because how can Minerals Council be addressed against the element of co-determination, but unions can sit on trust as trustees. And so that's the one area. The other area which I will actually recommend to the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy that they need to attend to is mining communities. I personally have done from my studies research on the mining communities and their view on the mining charter. And what they were saying is that it was pseudo-participation, the process that the department undertook. They did not participate actively. There were more consultation with chiefs than with mining communities. And there's a lot of tension. So the end result is if you start to roll out elements of the charter where communities are supposed to benefit, they might very likely sabotage it. So therefore, our advice to the department would be that they need to go on another roadshow to diffuse the tension that exists between the department and the communities. And then we felt there was a lack of education around the charter during the community roadshows. I think the last point on the charter we're making is that we found, and I found in the research that I did, is there's a major, major unhappiness amongst unions, workers, communities, senior employers, legal experts around the high allocation of ownership, share ownership and shareholding for black entrepreneurs versus what the communities and the workers are getting. We can send you more information on that, but we can see that if you look at mining's contested future, that's an area where actually all the social partners have a discomfort with and obviously needs to be addressed if there's going to be another charter for. The next slide deals with health and safety, Chair. And apart from the obvious necessity to protect people and save lives in terms of health and safety is one of the most important relationship building elements in the mining industry. Anglo-American, Minerals Council, and even Sibanye have now put tripartite forums together where DMRE, unions, their own employees, and the company's senior executives deal with health and safety issues where all the mining unions sit in one room where we have something in common, which is neutral territory. So therefore, that needs to be encouraged with all the employers. So if there are other employers going to sit here, we're hoping you're going to challenge them tomorrow and say, have you got these tripartite health and safety forums in place? Because as I said, Anglo-American, the champions, last week, the Minerals Council started with it, and Sibanye recently as well. Then, some of the mining statistics were dealt with this morning, and you also raised the issue at 29 fatalities, and there was a question around putting it in perspective, and we are very concerned. If you look at the reduction in mining operations, in mining activities, compared to the slow reduction in fatalities, it means there is a disconnect, because if there are less what we refer to as risk shifts, in other words, if there's an actual shift, we refer to it as a risk shift, so there's a massive, massive decrease in risk shifts in the mining industry, but you don't see that drop in fatalities. So as a result, we're saying that there is still a major problem, because if you work less hours underground, why don't you have a lot less fatalities? Then, that's the question, can we achieve zero harm? The one criticism we have with the mining companies, they've got production targets, and they push the production targets very hard, and that's got an impact on health and safety. And that's where we say production bonuses, as much as our members enjoy having it, we also don't want a member seeing killed, getting killed, or a mine worker as a result of them neglecting health and safety warnings because they have to achieve a specific production target. Then, we were also saying that to achieve zero harm is nearly impossible now. We see there's a vicious cycle. Mine workers getting retrenched, and as there's an increase in retrenchment, there's an increase in illegal mining activities because there's mine workers, their sole purpose is to look after 10 to 15 dependents, so if they get retrenched, the next thing they join the Zomazomas. It was mentioned also by Oasa pillar mining takes place. Then you have to start and close mines because of health and safety reasons, more people getting into that whole cycle. So it's a vicious cycle taking place. And then we're also still very critical, and some of our members are also at fault here, where they still have this I say you do management style in the mining, and it's got a massive influence on health and safety. And that's where we say, for you as a committee, whenever you deal with the Mine Health and Safety Act and amendments of the Act, make it easier in terms of, there's a Section 23 that allows workers to withdraw from an unsafe workplace, but they don't because they're afraid what the repercussions will be, and they, Section 22 say you can refuse to even commence work, which is dangerous, and there is a wonderful piece of legislation, but in practice it does not work, so it needs to have refining to make it easier for workers without any repercussions to withdraw from a dangerous work area. And then also, what the inquiries. You know, if you inquiry after a fatality, it's such a vindictive approach. It's a blame culture, and you don't get to the root causes in the end of that specific reason for a fatality. Then I've done a SWOT analysis, which I will run through quickly. So, Chair, the first thing is, in terms of our strengths, we say that one big positive for the mining industry is the combination of President Ramaphosa and Mr. Minister Montashe, despite the fact that they were unionists, that they understand labour, they also understand mining. We see the dynamics, the interaction at the mining in Darba, how they actually complement each other, so we say that's already something that we're pleased with, that under the new administration we can still have that specific combination, and that's a big positive. Then an upside and a downside. Due to the high levels of retrenchments, we still sit with a lot of skilled workers in abundance, but also we as the unions jointly managed to increase the retirement age from 60 to 63. So if there's an upswing in the economy and the mining industry, we sit with a lot of highly skilled mine workers. And that's why AngloGold Ashanti, when they decided to withdraw from the country, actually to disinvest, their new CEO, Kelvin Dushnisky, indicated that when he saw at their head office the wealth of health and safety, mining experts, geologists sitting in that building at the head office, they decided to keep, despite the fact that they will not have a single operation left in the country, to keep the people, the 500 people sitting at the head office in Jutta Street, down in Joburg City Center, for them to remain part of the global group due to the knowledge that the South Africans have. But we also have still a lot of other mining houses very committed to South Africa, and that's very important. You need the big role players, because they've got the best policies and procedures, the best practices. They can cross-subsidize their mines. They can absorb financial pressure, and they're also the biggest taxpayers. But what also, just, we had maybe a different conversation with AngloGold Ashanti. We were told by the CEO, Kelvin Dushnisky, that the reason why they have opted to disinvest, they took the amount of money that they must invest in Mponeng mine to extend the life of mine, versus taking exact same amount of money, convert it to dollars, go and invest it in Ghana, and the return on investment that they'll get there is much better than in South Africa. So it was purely a commercial decision that they have taken. Then we also say another strength is the rule of law is still intact. We notice if there's a labor court application, it's always a very sound response that we get from the judges. But what makes the mining industry so unique, the mining sector, the major strength is this is the only economic sector where business, labor, government have formal structures like the Mine Health and Safety Act, the Minerals Petroleum Board, those kind of structures where we interact. There's no other economic sector that have that tripartite structures. And then the last point, we say we still sit with some of the world's highest reserves and most commodities, making it a major strength for the mining industry. Then weaknesses. The first page of the weaknesses we do have a lot of mined out mines, they have marginal mines, and at the end of the day, those marginal mines, with a bit of a push when it comes to new costs, they close down. And the challenge we have as a union to make sure that there are portable skill transfers so that workers, if they end up getting retrenched, they can go, for instance, in agriculture projects. The Mandela precinct focus a lot on those agricultural projects, but it's not effective enough, and the retrenchment is happening a lot quicker than we can deal with or mitigate the consequences. The service delivery from the Rand Mutual is dropping because they took on a lot of new services in the metal engineering industry, and the Office of the Compensation Commission has also had major challenges with, and that affects mine workers being affected through health and injury. Then business rescue has also failed. So the Chapter 6 of the Companies Act needs to be amended after all the lessons we've learned of business rescue. If you look at Lily Mine, if you look at Kwaggafontein, if you look at Optima, it's an absolute mess. But those business rescue practitioners are stand to be corrected, but they earn between 18 and 25,000 rand a day. Some of those business rescue take 3 to 4 to 5 years even, times the fees that they're getting. So it's only the BRPs making money out of a mine in distress. Then we are concerned, you know, whenever there are opportunities, you don't see the junior miners jumping at those opportunities. We see the mess at Lily Mine. And then another concern and a weakness in the mining sector is local government failures, where a lot of the duties have been transferred to mining houses. Whenever there are service delivery protests, it's aimed at the mining houses. And one of the CEOs told us that it was now 2017, they had 37 marches to their mine. The mine, it was the old Aquarius mine there in Rustenburg. And they said 4 of them was mine-related, the rest was local government service delivery-related. They asked the community leaders, why do you march to the mines? They said, because you listen to us. So in the end, it still disrupt production. And it can lead, obviously, to job losses. The next slide on weaknesses, we still sit with the legacy of the previous minister. There were some appointments made, some poor appointments made in certain DMRE positions, and I know Ms. Natasha worked very hard to boost the morale, but we can still see the effect of employees working under people who does not have the required skills. Then the Mining Industry Growth Development Employment Task Team, that was in 2008 it was established. It was basically a principles forum, and that is collapsing. Now, when I put the slides together last week, I was not aware that actually, whilst I wanted to criticize the department that they did not get the growth and competitive task team working again and the principles forum functioning again, they have now a meeting on Friday with the stakeholders to revive it, so I will just quickly glance over that and say it seems that what I wanted to criticize the department for is something that they are addressing. Then if we get to opportunities, Chair, we say that we are a country that's very good in developing very good policies and procedures and documents, but that's an input. The output is obviously if you implement them. And job losses is a major problem, and we've got 2 very good documents. There was a mine, Pakisa, focusing on job losses in 2016. The document was put together by all the stakeholders, but never implemented. Then the Mineral Petroleum Board got an instruction to look at job losses. Wonderful document we've put together, submitted to the previous minister. It was never implemented. The same with the Framework Agreement on Sustainable Mining Industry that was signed in July 2013, document with a lot of valuable processes and activities. It was not implemented. So we don't need to go and reinvent the wheel. We must just implement that we've got. The same with the National Development Plan. When it comes to mining, it refers to elements to grow the sector, how to create job security, how to create employment and promotional opportunities. So those are the things that hopefully you can also play an oversight role to make sure that those specific documents that will contribute to a more sustainable mining industry, that it gets addressed. Fourth Industrial Revolution, the modernization process can extend the life of various mines, so we must embrace it. If we go like AngloGold Ashanti, 3-4 kilometers below the surface, then you don't want people working there. That's where technology plays a very important role. But there's another area, and I was hoping actually that one day you as a committee, unless you have invited them yet, I think most of you are aware that of Arnott Opco, it was ex-NUM officials and union officials and some of Arnott's, the geologists and some of the commercial experts, they've put a company together, Arnott Opco. They took over the shell of the Arnott mine, and that specific example of a cooperative that it's 100% employee-driven, they are coming up with a success story, and I think that's something we need to embrace, but what they have two challenges. One is obviously cash, and that's why I say that the establishment of a sovereign wealth fund is something that needs to be investigated, how these cooperatives can be assisted, and I'll get later to Eskom, the impact of how Eskom can positively respond to make it a bigger success story. Then the Minister Montashe commends the cleanup of the DMR regional offices. We hope you will retain the momentum when you cleaned up all the offices. Then, when it comes to NPRDA amendments, now, I want to refer to regulatory certainty or uncertainty, but not in the sense that only the content. It is just that it's inevitable that during your administration, there will be amendments in terms of the NPRDA, because if you can recall, there were amendments proposed, and then there was amendment bill also proposed afterwards that revised the initial amendments. And that was about 7 years that this specific portfolio committee and other government structures and parliamentary structures engaged with those amendments to create a lot of uncertainty. So whenever there is further amendments proposed, what we ask for is a speedy process. And then we also suggest that if those NPRDA amendments land up in this committee, that you look at future forums, how to strengthen future forums. You also referred to it, how you get communities involved there, make it functional. And then we also suggest, look at elements like once empowered, always empowered. Look at elements of community development. Put it into the NPRDA. The mining charter is secondary legislation, so some mining houses regard it as a guideline. So if you put it into the NPRDA, some of those elements, then it's legislated, and it creates regulatory certainty, because it's much more difficult to amend an act of parliament than a mining charter. And I think that in itself will create regulatory certainty. And why it's so important, during the mining charter negotiation process, there was a firm that represents mainly investors from Canada, and they had to come and explain to us why is it that you have international investors that will go and invest in countries like the DRC, where what requires 51% nationalization, that you have to basically give 51% of your company away. Why do they go and invest there, but they are against the 26% or the 30% in South Africa? And they said it's very simple, because that 51% or whatever the regulation is has been in place for many years, and there is absolutely no indication that it will ever change. So if they do the cost analysis and the return on investment, they know that's the only exposure they have. Whereas in South Africa, they're not sure always if there are going to be amendments and changes. So that's why we say if you can transfer a lot of the charter elements into the Act, then it's legislated. Then we're talking about boards. I say it hesitantly because I serve on the Minerals and Petroleum Board and on the State Island Trade on that board. But I think it's also part of the amendments needs to look at the role of those boards. At the moment, the Minerals and Petroleum Board main function is actually to duplicate investigations into a Section 52. The Section 52 relates to a retention process, and the DMR must first be informed, and then the Mineral Petroleum Board can investigate it. And the reports that we submit is actually a copy and paste of all the previous 100 reports that we submitted. We just changed the name of the employer. And that's a function that actually the department can fulfill. So we also say that you need to scrutinize the role and the effectiveness of the Mineral Petroleum Board and some of those other statutory boards. And then for us as unions, this is an opportunity more for us as unions, but you can play the oversight role, is to focus more on just transition, to the transfer to a low carbon economy or climate justice as a reality. And we need to move into that space, what is referred to as the Anthropocene. That's that whole academic debate around that element. The threats for the mining industry, my next slide, Chair, is already covered under the regulatory changes, so I'm not going to elaborate further on that. But then on the Eskom crisis, you know, it was referred to earlier today around gold fields and the success story of mechanization. But day before yesterday, Nick Holland, and I'm just going to read two short paragraphs. Nick Holland, who's Goldfield CEO, said, "There are concerns about the impact of Eskom's cost increase on the South Deep mine." You know, we're talking about this wonderful mechanized mine. He said that's the last of Goldfield's assets in South Africa. Holland said that the rate electricity prices are rising, the company could double its annual electricity spend from 500 million to a billion within 5 years. For a company with such a single mind, this has an influence that will lead to further restructuring, but for the broader gold and mining industry in South Africa, there would be severe repercussions, and it goes on and on and on, how many jobs will be lost. And I noticed in the same article, Minerals Council, and they will most probably repeat it tomorrow, they said Eskom will cost, if I just look at the figure, they said Eskom will cost the mining industry 90,000 jobs over the next 3 years. And then Holland made a solution, and he said the solution is to expedite the licensing of large solar projects planned by large industrial companies. So hopefully this is where you can play a role, and the same thing is to put pressure on Eskom to restore the old coal contracts to Arnold Comco, the cooperative. Then, you know, the one thing just whilst I'm on this topic, it's a very complicated and difficult thing, for, especially for Solidarity, NUM and NUMSA. We are the three recognized unions at Eskom. So now we're fighting Eskom, because that's also what we need to do and what our members want, that they cannot retrench a single worker. And which that is our job, there's no debate around it, but in the meantime, there's a knock-on effect. We're actually losing members in the mining industry, and that's obviously where we as unions will also need to make sure that the Eskom solution is an overall solution. Then, it was referred to the collapse of the Minerals Council collective bargaining structures. We got a letter last night, the unions, to say that it's the end of collective bargaining, and no more further debate in the coal sector. And what's the problem is that now you will find wage and conditions of employment disparities. So the companies will now use labor costs as a strategic advantage, because whereas all the employees have the same benefits in the same sector, and it's not to anyone's advantage, this is what you will start to see, is that specific disparity. And that is one of our major concerns from a union point of view. I refer to the illegal mining activities, and then the one example that I just forgot to mention earlier is at Sibanye Kup mines, where those mines were closed down, a few thousand workers lost their jobs purely as a result of the fact that illegal mining got totally out of control. Now, when it comes to solutions, it's very difficult because we know there are a lot of people who enter into that space as a result of purely desperation. And in the end, it's a war down in the mines. And I noticed recently there were successes where the police got involved. Should the army get involved? I'm not sure. But in the end, the negative effects is of such that that obviously, as you said, Chair, it's a debate for one, maybe one item of for debate in this committee. But then the end result is there's an increase in civil unrest around mines because the frustration levels are high, companies are not delivering on their social and labour plans, and that's obviously part of the things. And a lot of these aspects what I'm mentioning here is to highlight what are the things that's under our control. There are certain things like commodity prices, the exchange rate, etc., etc., that's not under our control. But the things, a lot of things in here, it's under our control. And if we all say we are leaders, then we need to address these things. And then one other aspect is that the mine pension funds have now more pensioners on their funds than active employees. So it means also the pension funds will get under pressure over time. Then this, if you look at this next slide on threats, it's the employment insecurity. It leads to worker loss in concentration and focus, the stress. You know, obviously alter the function of the brain, and there's not enough research being done on mine workers on the impact of stress and discomfort they experience on their mental health and depression and anxiety. And that's the problem with health and safety. If we talk about health and safety, the first thing that comes to mind is fatalities, but on the health side, not enough is being done despite the recent developments on silicosis. Then the same with production pressure after the Section 54. There's a Section 54 that gets issued where a mine inspector can close a mine for a temporary period, and that's one thing where we want to ask you if those Section 54 closure of a mine that gives a lot of authority and power to a mine inspector, there needs to be proper guidelines so that it cannot be abused, so that both the employer and the inspector, because we get called in as unions to go and tell the inspector to open up the mine again, and there is not a proper guideline where it's just a guideline to be followed, because there's still a very grey area. And the other problem is, if you apply it in areas where there is an abuse of power, the danger of a Section 54 is also that since we have these deep mines in gold mines, there's a geological balance that needs to always remain there. So if you blast, you restore that balance. If you close a mine for a few weeks or a few days, that pressure starts to build, and it's a very dangerous time if you open up a mine again. That's why it's important that you only close it when it's absolutely necessary and to protect lives, obviously. I've referred to the majoritarian principle, which is undemocratic. It's a tit-for-tat thing in a union environment. And we're basically having these debates with our fellow unionists. Obviously, the one thing about unions, we can have open and honest debates with the other. We differ on ideology, but in the end, we still represent workers. And that's where we sometimes say to them, our fellow unions, if you say you're a Marxist or you're a socialist, how can you then we have a situation where this is this working class, this unity? You know, that's a class contradiction, but that's a debate for us as unionists, which we have to resolve amongst each other, but that is still something that creates a lot of tension, and that tension spills over to health and safety related matters. The same thing, employee death is a major problem, because due to previous strikes, lengthy strikes, the workers incurred a lot of debt. It's still putting a lot of pressure on us during wage negotiations, and also obviously a lot of pressure on those workers to enter into the illegal mining field. Then concluding remarks, my second last slide. First of all, the mining sector is a battleground, and that England needs to move swiftly back to normality. And then we say, in order for the mining sector to become a sunrise sector again, it will not happen overnight. It will require strong leadership. We need to have common objectives. And again, to get into the ideology space or those different kinds of paradigms, we say that we must do what Singapore did. They took out of all the different paradigms and ideology what worked best for that country to grow. So, and that's why we're saying we need to control what is controllable, because then you'll get your investment, you'll get your growth, government will get their tax income, their jobs will be, because at the moment, if it doesn't help if you don't retrench, but you don't create new jobs. And then obviously, if there are more jobs, you'll have fewer community protests, etc., etc. Then, what we also say that there needs to be a mining sector in Daarbop, where we can discuss this matter further, but I will then deal with that in my last slide. And then also, just on the concluding remarks, at the moment, workers are paying the price. And I don't want to go into the merit. I do understand, I read the legislation, it comes to carbon tax, royalty tax, mining charter costs, ESCOM-related costs. In the end, it leads to lower increases and more retrenchments. And we cannot have workers paying the price for that. And that's obviously where we as unions play a role, but nevertheless, the reality is we're fighting those policies, and sometimes feel we stand alone. The last slide, Chair, is that expectations from this portfolio committee, we said you've got an oversight role, which you're fulfilling here today, but we also feel you need to hold the social partners accountable. You know, when it comes to elements of race, relationship building, how to eliminate health and safety causes, to achieve climate justice, how to include communities as true social partners. He said this is the area where you need to assist the mining sector to achieve peace and stability, where there's closer cooperation, regulatory certainty, in which I qualified and said we deal with legislation changes swiftly, and deal with illegal mining, less fatalities, and an increase in capital investments. So just to end off, I refer to the mining CODESA. Now, in the end, we all know it sounds like a wonderful thing to say, but it will never happen anyway. But what we're saying is that here is at least a platform where we can have that mini kind of CODESA, where you bring the social partners together, hold them responsible. Years ago, when this whole Aurora Pamotzi thing was a matter which affected a lot of lives and a lot of people and a lot of controversy, we had to come here to the portfolio committee nearly three or four times a year, where the liquidators, the unions, mining companies involved, we had to come and give report back on commitments we made, how we will deal with that matter, and you played an oversight role to deal with that one specific crisis in mining, and that's what we're saying. Hopefully this is a start of this committee fulfilling a similar role. Thank you, Jim.
That's a wonderful question. They say when I
Well, thank you, Chair. Gentleman from Solidarity, he has presented here. And I was struggling to understand here a lot of things. Maybe it's because in the beginning he said something like they are representing mainly whites. Yeah, it might happen that that particular sentence made me to maybe also lose interest to listen to what he was saying. Because I don't necessarily look with these other two unionists, if I may say. We have listened to them. But here comes this one. He's coming here in this committee. They are telling us they are representing whites. I'm not sure if they want us to take them serious or what. Because look, this is a South Africa. And for that matter, it's 25 years after apartheid. So this is a country where we call this country multiracial. You cannot then come here and tell us that we are representing white people. And then you know for sure that we are black as a committee member. So maybe we must excuse ourselves as because we are black. Maybe this thing doesn't concern us. I'm not sure. But this, I find it as a very serious insult to come here and tell us that you are representing white, number one. Well, number two, you are in your report or representative, you are telling us about community and all those things. Community where they must benefit from the mines and all those things. Now you are making also us, you are making it difficult for us also to understand which community. White community, maybe speaking about that area called Orenia, I'm not sure. Because, which community? Because you are saying you are representing white, but you are telling us about community, which community? But because South Africa has got mixed communities. We are mixed. It's a rainbow nation. So I don't understand that. Totally. That is also why you are later on coming here to tell us about CODESA and all those things. Which when we understand CODESA happened somewhere very much long time ago, I think 1991. When South Africa was negotiating the transition between apartheid government and the new South Africa. And of which this thing was happening 28 years later, I mean 28 years back, it was apartheid regime. So you are coming to remind us about apartheid as a union. So, Chairperson, I don't necessarily understand or hear how can we assist here or why, because this thing here does not represent the people of South Africa, if I have understood it correctly. Because we can't speak on behalf of the minority, because we all know that in South Africa, white people are minority, if I may say it that way. So we are here to come and speak about minority, white people. We cannot...
Chairperson, the Honourable Mutsinjane is saying that you can't represent minorities here. Then who represents who? I mean, we represent all South Africans in this Parliament. As members of Parliament, we represent all South Africans. So, can I finish, please, Chair? My point of order is that he cannot say that white South Africans cannot be represented in Parliament. That's what he's just said. We need to be very careful to make sure that we represent all South Africans.
Wait a minute. Why won't any of you say so?
Because he said so. He just said it.
No.
He said that you can't come here and represent minorities. That's what he's just said. That's what he's just said. You cannot come here and represent minorities.
An order, let me first clarify an order. An order is something that is not parliamentary.
It is an order.
It is not. I will really go that way. It is not. You can go and explain it is not. That is his views, his opinion. That is why I would have allowed solidarity when they respond. That's why I could have ruled an order, but because solidarity is still going to come, they will respond. They will explain whether they represent the minority.
Can I get clarity from you?
Yes.
Can you explain to me whether or not minorities are permitted to be represented in this parliament?
Solidarity is going
to happen. No, Chair. Can you tell me?
No.
I'm asking you.
No.
I'm not a member of Solidarity. I have nothing to do with Solidarity. I'm asking this. I'm asking this of you.
I'm saying to you.
I'm asking this of you, Chair. Are you going to allow a member of this House to say that minorities have no voice in this parliament?
No.
Then and please rule him out of order, Chair.
Wait. I said, he will not be out of order. If Solidarity is still going to respond, therefore the right to respond to the clarity that is seeking. That issue will only arise then. That's why I said I rule, because we are asking questions of clarity. You will then respond to that question of clarity.
Chairperson, again, can I ask that this matter be referred to the Rules Committee? Can I ask that this matter be referred to the Rules Committee? Because it is unparliamentary for a person to say that any South African may not be represented in this parliament.
No. I'm saying, we'll check the records, we'll listen. Continue, Honourable Tender.
Thank you, Chair. At least for the first time today, that I know that the Honourable Member also is a member of Solidarity. I didn't know.
Point of order, Chair.
Now, because I'm responding
to the Chair, tell me whether I'm a member of any organization.
Not on that one. Don't make it difficult for me. He's a member of the Democratic Alliance.
That's what I thought.
You can say he sympathizes, not that he is a member, but that's not a fact.
Yeah, I might have
shared.
Maybe.
No. You know my main problem. No, I've ruled him out of order. That's what I've done. I've taken your order. But what he says is out of order. Can we not divert the attention of the meeting on a matter? We are not dealing with your friends now. We have invited people. Can we ask the questions of clarity we want to ask to them? And then let's deal with our own issues.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I'll never be also intimidated by the honourable member here so that I can challenge the question the way he wants. I will ask questions the way I want to ask as a member of this committee. I'm asking the Solidarity, in fact I was like committing to the Solidarity that they say they are representing mainly white people, or white workers in other words. And then I'm directing this thing to them. That is why I want the clarity to them, not to this honourable member yet. So that is why I said I didn't know whether maybe it got shared there, I don't know. But anyway, I'm directing this to the Solidarity. There they are saying yes, they understand that I'm directing this question to them, not to him this side. Yeah, that is the issue. Actually, I was almost finished for the interest of time and everything. So in short, Chapter 10. I really would love to have the clarity on that point as to say, what does the Solidarity represent here? If indeed it represents the workers of South Africa as a rainbow nation, or rainbow workers, if I may put it that way, then it's fine, then they've got a point to come here, seek clarity, or also us seeking clarity, or working together going forward, so we can then get each other there. But as long as I'm not clear about who they represent, because that is where we start. They presented, some of these things they presented here, it makes a lot of sense, of course. But because the first one, it didn't make a sense. Now it overrules everything. Because you can't come here and talk about say, a certain nation of people only in South Africa. It's long time, we are gone long time of these issues of CODESA. They will explain to us that they still want CODESA to come back and negotiate what? Because, by the way, CODESA was negotiating the transition of South Africa from apartheid to the new South Africa. So maybe they're going to explain to us. And we can't live here without understanding these things here. They need to explain to us, then we understand, then we get along. Because 5 years is still too far. We're still going to work together till 5 years. And then we must know who do we working with here. Because if indeed we are working with people who are representing some kind of people, then some of us will excuse ourselves. Because we are representing all the people here. Because once we come here in Parliament, then we represent everybody. Everybody. Indian colors and everybody in the country. So that's the clarity I wanted, Chairperson. Well, there are a lot of other things. For the interest of time, let me also give other members a chance to also can carry on. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No,
sir,
Chairperson. Let me indicate in myself, when we check to the positives, I just want to check that when you see Mantashe vision is better than the Zwane vision in the government, I don't understand because when we check here, those two ministers that we indicated to them, they are not the first ministers. So, this statement is not here to build us, it's to divide us. You divide us. And you come back again and you say the combination of Ramaphosa and Mantashe, they are not the first, it's not the first president and the other one. It's not the best minister. What are you saying? So, some of us, I'm beginning to be afraid. Because if you check, I don't want the situation where the next parliament, you find that our chairperson is no longer the chairperson of the committee. And then you quote him to say, now we have a better chairperson. Because you don't know anything, because even tomorrow, Zwane can come back again to be the minister. Because it's politics. Then this statement is not good, because you just target an individual. In terms of my understanding, when you come here as a politician myself, I'm not here to implement my own vision and mission. It's the vision and mission for the department. In politics, it's a vision of our manifesto of all political parties, not for individuals. But I'll ask you to make sure that you improve on that. I don't want to come back to the other one to say white or black. I'm not representing the black. I'm representing the people of South Africa, what I'm saying. I'm not representing the quarter of our country. I'm representing the people of South Africa. But let us not divide us in terms of writing. I think if you can go ahead and withdraw this statement, because it's not good for the country. Thank you.
I don't know what to say, Chairperson. I'm floored by some of the comments that have been made here. I listen to people make blatant political statements. I listen to people say, you can't say this, you can't say that. I listen to people say that you can't be represented, that certain groups can't be represented here. I listen to all of this, and I think what has happened to an opportunity opportunity for us to engage with stakeholders. What has happened was an opportunity for us to hear what different groupings within the industry have to say, no matter who they might represent, whether they represent employers or employees, whether they represent an organizational body or a union representing white workers or a union representing black workers or a union representing Indian workers or colored workers. What does it matter? We are here to listen to all of them. And that's where I have a problem. And then when another member starts shutting down inputs and saying, you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't say the next thing, then I have a problem. But let me get to the nub of the presentation, because I think that's what we are here to actually talk about. So, particularly, let me back up. You referred to, at one point, junior miners on slide, the first slide about the weaknesses. And you said they're not jumping at opportunities and lessons from Lily Mine. I'd just like clarity from you as to how you classify junior miners. Are you using the Department of Mineral Resources definition, or are you using the international definition? Which then brings me to one of the things that I don't think has been addressed here, and that is mining rights and the different classes of mining rights and the employment or the labor relations situation in the different classes of mining rights. Would you give us some input on that? You spoke about the role of the shutdowns or the union when a mine gets shut down and for better controls over that. And I've heard of a number of incidents where a mining inspector will arrive on a Friday afternoon and say, I'm shutting down the mine and unless you give me X, Y, Z, you can't mine for the next 48 hours or 72 hours or whatever it might be. Are you aware of incidents like that? And if so, what action is being taken by you as a union to address that? Are you dealing with it with DMR? Are you dealing with it with the Mining or the Minerals Council? Where is your role in that situation? Then I'd like to come back to something that both yourselves and UASA spoke about, and that was the breakdown of the collective bargaining structures. Now, I understand that is the reality, that the structures have broken down. But maybe it's time for some reflection here as to why it has broken down. In other words, is it intransigent employer bodies? Is it intransigent union bodies? Is it unrealistic expectations? What is the cause of that breakdown between the collective bargaining structures? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. I think the issue raised probably needs to get context. And
I'm sorry, Chair.
And probably with less emotion. I just want to speak to solidarity on the dangers of characterizing colors and race in this. We as members of parliament took an oath that we are going to serve the people of South Africa as a whole. Now, your presentation makes particular recommendations among other things, which we must go and advance with the department, legislative or otherwise. Now, do not put us in a situation where we first wear a race before we assist your lobby. But that's what you're doing, and it's very dangerous to do that. So allow us as members of parliament to look at an issue, its content, and help the situation if we believe that it takes South Africa forward. But that's what we are all about. So without emotions, I think we to know what is your view about VEE. Could it be influenced by what we just spoke about now? That is the question. The second question or last question is that, and you will bear with me if I did not hear you correctly because we're a bit far. Amongst other solutions that you were giving on the ESCOM crisis, and I hope I heard you correctly, that you said there needs to be restoring of a coal contract with, and you mentioned the company as a cooperative. I want you to take us back there and take us into confidence why that particular company, among others that were contracted to supply coal, what is so special with this one? Maybe in that context we'll gain some information to help the situation if we believe it takes South Africa forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. disadvantage of being the last speaker. Chairperson, can I go through the presentation? Let me first welcome the presentation. I was also disturbed by some of the contents of the report. First name calling Mandashe and the Zones. I would have preferred the minister or the former minister and all that. But first page, Chairperson, is opening remarks, bulletin two. It's bullet two. Mining industry at the crossroads. Maybe if they can clarify that, what do they mean? Under labor relations, Chairperson, I want to understand bullet two. Increase in threshold disputes and democratic majoritarian principles. Are they saying the majority unions are not supposed to voice out the demands of their members, or what is it that they are saying? Chairperson, I think the witness has taken my BEE question. Health and safety, bullet two, fewer risk shifts but more fatalities. Chairperson, I want them to drill deep on this point. What causes that? If you have fewer, because I think the gentleman also alluded to fatigue, miners being tired and all that. So maybe if he can just explain it to us that the people, like even the last bullet, mining management possess poor management skills. I say you do. It means the people who are working in the mines have no brains, because he made mention of the fact that they are scared of losing jobs. Section 22 says you can refuse to do dangerous work. People go there to do dangerous work because they are just scared to lose jobs. My last point, Chairperson, we won't be bullied in this portfolio point, and we are not here to be spokespersons of anybody. I might hear wrongly. There is no need for me to speak on behalf of the people who are presenting, because they are sick here. They will respond to the question that I might have not grasped at the time the presentation was done. So bullying won't assist. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson, the Honourable Member is implying that I was bullying, and I take offence to that. If she has a problem with me, we can go talk outside quietly, but this is not the place for it. Let's just focus on the presentations.
I do have a problem. I have a problem with you, and I have a
know, with all due respect, at home, I want to make this example. I want to put it in English. From my rural village, the first was in the family where on my father's life, he used to give a tough time. I'm still trying to think what form of cure I will get here. He used to give us tough time, and he's the other brother. Then I had to speak to the firstborn of him. To say every time there's a traditional function at home, because the shy unit. So around 11, I must make it a point that he gets a nip. And when he finishes at 11:30 to 12, we bring another. Then after that, it was deep. The time he wakes up is 3:00 and everyone is fine. Because the function can't continue if you didn't do that.
Yeah.
So please, honorable members, neither of you should learn that. I must try and find that tactic. Because it may not work because the buying doesn't exist now. So don't make my work more difficult. My appeal is, when we invite people, and I'm telling you, when an order is made, let's just respect it. Let's then say we've got our own meeting without inviting people. Then let's deal with each other. At least when Kusa Kaneo say, no, order. But when you invite people and then you start to demonstrate how you treat yourself, you are actually disrespecting them. There's no basis to invite them in the meeting to come and demonstrate who can argue or counter the HR. Can you please, even if you raise an order, when the order is clarified, can you just respect that the order is given? That's my first question. The second thing, I said this thing from the word go. We are now dealing with our own problem. I said this thing from the word go. I said, if we can try by all means and stick to what people say they expect from this committee, how they think we can help them, we should then. Unfortunately, I allowed other things to be made. Now, I will make my comment on some of the things, but there's only one mistake I don't want to do. I don't want to make some comments on the opportunity. There are observations that then I will make. And I repeat, the reason I did not make comment on any matter, whether I feel it was right or wrong, is simply because in law they say it's a right of reply. Probably the manner in which they understood, the reason why I said, the manner in which they understood you, it may not be what you meant. Just make an example. Or it may be the manner in which you put it that made them cross that under. So I don't want, that's why I didn't want to protect anyone. Then we can then deal with the order when you have been able, but the reason you say it's a question of clarity is that you must clarify what is their understanding on what you present. Then we give you an opportunity to those clarity that they are seeking, you respond to it. That is the opportunity.
Chair, we are unionists. We're having robust debate amongst each other. We have moved way beyond the point where, you know, we don't have sensitivities. I'm glad that we're having this debate. And the first thing I want to say is that the reason why I put the context is to say that you must understand the fact that Solidarity represents mainly white employees, not only, there are trade unions who represent 100% black employees. We've got mainly white. Is to say, that's where I come from as a general secretary. So despite the fact these
are our views. We embrace the mining charter. We would like to see these amendments. We would like the following to happen. But you must know, I don't want to get into an artificial debate and try to play for the audience and say things that, you know, Solidarity wants the freedom charter to be implemented. Solidarity wants things to do just to impress you, but deep down in my heart, I'm dishonest. So I wanted to put the context here and say the thing you must understand. The fact that 33% of our members are black and the balance is white. We are a predominantly white trade union. But regardless of that, when it comes to the mining industry, there are elements of the industry that we fully understand. And I once or twice did say we fully understand the history. But I will, if the chair will allow, I will send research to you what we've done around the mining chart. And after you read it, you will see our angle is totally contrary to perhaps the impression we created. Secondly, go and look at the Daily Maverick last week. Was there an interview with Solidarity regarding the growth of our black members? So the context was to tell you that regardless, remember the Mine Workers Union was a trade union, and that's the context that you must see. If you look at the old Mine Workers Union, when it comes to job preservation, when it comes to blasting certificates, being awarded to white workers, it was backed by the mine workers union that we come from. So that's why I wanted to put the context is that what we say is regardless of us being a union within Maywhite, we embrace the following. So obviously I need to clarify that the non-racial element is also something where we as unionists understand each other. Whilst AMCU, NUM, NUMSA, SAPAWU will represent mainly the black mine workers, we represent mainly white mine workers, together we represent all mine workers. And that's how we interact. You know, we easily interact with each other and say, no, that's something for your union to deal with, etc., etc. So I maybe misunderstood the context of these kind of debates because this is how we as unionists interact with each other, very casually around the race-related issue, very casually about ideological differences and about transformation. And that's how the conduct we had during the whole mining charter negotiation. You know, there are elements in the mining charter which was proposed by Solidarity where our members will get zero benefit. So in the end, I can tell you that it was not to spark the kind of debate we had. It was not in any way to be controversial, but it was more a point to say to you, we're not here for white interest only, despite the fact that our members are mainly white. But I will send you the research that we've done, and go and read the Daily Maverick article, then you will see, you know, how we, you know, want to be part of the whole transformation process of the mining industry as well. The matter regarding the Montashe version, again, the research that I will send you will show that was the responses was not from Solidarity members, was to say that there were certain elements in the charter like the naturalization clause, how it was implemented, the fact that it took 6 months under Minister Montashe to conclude, whilst for 2 years we could not conclude it, the fact that there were elements of the charter like the 1% of turnover needs to be paid into a fund that wiped so much of the share value of many mining companies just when that clause came out. And where I refer to Ramaphosa and Montashe, I first said, I honestly, and the recordings, obviously, there are recordings referred to the president, referred to the minister, and then referred to the so-called Montashe version. It's absolutely no disrespect. And I can also refer to an opinion piece that was written over the respect and the relationship between Solidarity and the President and the mining minister, to put that all into context. The matter dealing with the junior mining, there's another question around mining rights that I did not capture it well enough, but what we do believe is that there is this push for junior miners in terms of black empowered miners, where you will still have a situation where we believe that they are set up for failure. So the end result, that's why we look at the Sovereign Wealth Fund and we refer to the definition of the DMR, not junior miners in terms of the international definition, to say that there's a lot of opportunities to transform the mining industry, but since mining is such a cutthroat industry, if a marginal junior mining company comes in with the winter tariffs of Eskom kicking in, with various costs kicking in, that's the end of that mining company, which means then it's easy to say it's a failure of junior miners. So that's where we're saying is that the junior miners are not jumping at those opportunities because they simply, you know, you cannot run marginalized mines if you don't have the backing of a big holding company, of international company, etc., etc. So we said, so we will not grow that specific industry in that regard. The question around the Section 54 shutdowns, we had it, for instance, that there was a specific inspector who was an ex-employee of a mining company, left under a cloud, became an inspector in that area of that specific mining company, and then issued Section 54's left, right, and center, major impact on our workers, etc., etc. And in the end, that was one example where you can abuse Section 54 because there's no clear guideline. What we as unions do is we jointly approach the DMR. Because we know our members lose out, there's certain allowances, certain bonuses that they can only get if they're underground. So we will approach the DMR and say you should have issued a Section 55 to go and correct the mistakes. Etc., etc. So there we do play a role and we are a lot more effective. The mining companies run to the courts, that's what they do. So we merely engage, but we are very sensitive to the impact it's having on our members. The breakdown of the collective bargaining structure, it's actually a very difficult question to answer because, yes, we have to reflect on our own conduct. One of the mining houses said they are the biggest mining company in the coal sector. So if they bargain on a centralized level, whenever there's a strike, the unions target their mines because they're a big mining company, there's the most employees, it's the easiest to concentrate the strike. And then the other mines carry on mining and they bear the brunt of a strike. So that was their reasoning. Other mining companies said, but they are in different states of maturity, or some of them even said they find themselves in a position of survival. So they want to negotiate a deal that can only be applicable in terms of their own sustainability for that mining company. So that we understand. We've just proposed other models and say let's still have the centralized forum where each mining company can put forward their own demands. We do a tailor-made for each mining company, but the oneness remains there. And the one thing if you deal with on a collective bargaining way is that the mining companies share their industry challenges with all the unions sitting in one room. We share our frustration with all the mining companies sitting in one room. And that now we will lose that element. And that's why we felt we just should have looked at a different model. Then the question around the BEE entrepreneurs, I will deal with it in the research and show what the general feeling is around that. We do obviously fully understand if where we come from. I can cross-examine the Minerals Council one day, because if you look at the mining industry, the situation that we were in, it started with the Chamber of Mines, whereas in 1887, the Glen Grave Act was implemented for on instruction of the Chamber of Mines, so that black mine workers cannot, they have to pay tax, so if you have to pay tax, you have to work, to force black mine workers, black employed people to go and work in mines. So that was what they started. Then the second thing is that the Natives and Land Act was an instruction of the Chamber of Mines, and then the last thing is you also had the pass laws was also introduced on instruction of Cecil John Rhodes, so that the mine workers after the first month of pay they cannot leave. So those kind of things we're aware of, and we know what the consequences would be. So it would be absolutely stupid and foolish for us to sit here and deny the history of the mining industry and say we don't support the changes proposed in the mining charter, the MPRDA, and the constitution. So I can definitely say to you, we fully embrace what needs to place to rectify what happened in the past. Then the Eskom matter is that we've got this ARROC OPCO, that's the car printer, the ex-mine workers, they already got the mining license, but they still don't have the mining contract. That's the only thing missing, where Eskom must introduce the old mining contract they had with Exxaro. And that's the one element where we were saying that we were hoping one way or another those workers can be assisted, because they're going to bring in all the old mine workers that used to work there. Just below 3,000, they will be the first people to be reemployed at the mine that's standing there with a lot of coal reserves. They will introduce Mining Charter 3 provisions regarding shareholding, and we can say, but that's a success story. If you talk about junior mining, that's a success story that we need to embrace, and it gives hope. And if you talk to those mine workers, they don't wear their union hats anymore. You know, they also they look at the greater good of all workers. Then the mining industry at the crossroads, it's not for me to rattle down all the statistics of the mining industry, how year on year there's a decline in mining production. There are the Fraser Institute index, there's the various index, but also a lot of ways that we see that our mining industry is in decline despite all the reserves that we still have, especially if you look at platinum. And there's no need for our mining industry to shrink at the stake that is happening. And we say then we need to take everything that we have under control and put the mining industry on track. We will highly unlikely that we will grow the industry in totality, but at least we can do is the pace at which it's shrinking. We can obviously let it happen at a different pace, but also there's way too much tension, and there's a build-up in tension in the mining industry, and then we say that needs to be diffused. The undemocratic majoritarian principle, we acknowledge the right of the majority union to have more rights and privileges compared to minority unions, but what automatically happens, say for argument's sake, you are sized the majority union. They represent 50% plus one of the workers at the workplace. Then the majoritarian principle, if it gets applied in terms of Section 18, they can go into agreement with a company where they're the only recognized union. If NUMSA represents 10 or 15%, any of them 40% solidarity, it means nothing. It's winner takes all. And there we say that's undemocratic. In that regard, that there's then a large number of workers whose freedom of association gets taken away from them, and that was one of many causes. Marikana, there were socio-economic circumstances, but the majoritarian principle as it was applied at Impala, platinum led to the heightened tension and was one of the reasons Noi, we had that unfortunate incident. So we say that let the minority unions, which is all the unions in a certain, still have rights, even if it's limited rights, to represent their members. Then the question around the fewer risk shifts. As the mining industry is in decline, they are, if you count, first of all, if you look at the large number of shafts and mines that got closed down over the last 5 years, AngloGold Ashanti had, 8 years ago, they had, I think, about 13 or 14 active mines. They've got one left. So we say 11 mines closed down, so there are 11 or 12. So there are no mining operation at 12 mines. So you must say, if there was a 50% or even an 80% drop in production at one company, then their stats must drop by 80%. And that goes for the same mining industry. So we say you recognize a lot of mines get closed down, so there are a lot more mining operations, but the decline in fatalities does not correspond in the closure of the number of mines that close down. So there are less mining activity, a lot less mining activity, but you see a gradual reduction in fatality. So we say, but then mathematically there's something wrong. I know there are one or two questions that I did not address fully, but the last one is also the question around mine workers not exercising their rights to withdraw from a dangerous workplace or not to enter a workplace. That, unfortunately, it's a fact that there is still, and there's one mining company is especially guilty, and they've got a very autocratic style where workers get threatened that they will be dismissed. Workers get severely prejudiced if they withdraw from a specific area and they don't and they don't meet their production target due to the fact that they were afraid. So unfortunately, it's not a weakness on the side of workers. It's workers that know they can get dismissed, and a lot of workers have been dismissed. So in the end, you put your own life and the lives of your dependents on the line because of being afraid to withdraw safely. So, and that's an issue that's an ongoing debate at every health and safety conference or forum that we have. Chair, maybe can I just ask, there was one question around mining rights that I did not capture it correctly. That can be repeated if necessary, just for answering.
I asked about the, first of all, the labor relations situation with the different mining rights categories, so prospecting, exploration, etc. Are there differences in... Sorry, am I out of order, Chair?
You are.
Oh, I apologize.
You are saying through the chair.
Sorry, Chair, through the chair. Thank you, Chair. So I asked about the labor relations situation in the different classes of mining rights and whether or not there were differences between, for example, people with a prospecting license versus people with a full mining license. And secondly, to what extent the impact of regulatory and I guess this might be a little bit of a new question or sneaking in a new question, but the impact of regulatory or administrative functions are hindering the rollout of licenses.
Chair, if I can just answer the last question. I must say I'm going to give a very watered down response, and that's something that I think it's more tomorrow for the Minerals Council to respond to. But my understanding was that there's more than 400 prospecting licenses issued in the past, I think it's going to be corrected, 12 or 18 months, but nearly none of those were exercised. The end result is you'll have a company like Shaft Sinkers that has gone belly up merely for the fact that we don't sink any shafts, so there's no need for a company like that. So there's a lot more stability in a company who's got still a mining license for the maximum term, because first of all, there's job security. Secondly, the company don't cut corners because the life of mine is so long. So the shorter the mining license period, the more you find that the company have a more aggressive approach towards to labor relations in terms of termination of services of employees, and they don't have to pay retrenchment packages, etc. But Jay, if it's all in order, I'm not really qualified to answer that question.
Okay, thank you very much. Another question. Let me first address one issue. Let me finance one. We have addressed one issue. This country isn't where we are. I sometimes say I appreciate the person who say things as they are and continue to differ without the person saying things as they are than the person who says something that is not saying and pretending. The reason I'm saying this is that you like it or not, and please bear with me so directly, bear with me on that as well, just to blunt.
Yeah.
We can't expect that there's one of us to think the same. How much is that? You say we don't represent, but in fact we sit here in the house with the different kinds of land. We sit in the house with the different class. They state what they stand. And they're entitled to efficiency. And I didn't want to approach the issue from an angle of might be correct a minority and so forth. But it's a non-South African who wouldn't understand that equally as their black aspirations, their white fears. Want to assume. And therefore, from time to time, in the process of engagement, they will always be out of interest for people who feel that, in as much as you're going like this, and unfortunately, I think that's why the Constitution allows that plurality of ideas. Where it becomes a problem, that's how I understood, is when it blatantly becomes a racist approach. So when people still exist, it means they exist within a particular context of living and survival. So I want us to think of that. And I'm sure from the point of view of where most of us will stand, we'll say completely different view. But I dare to say this thing. You can't hide it. If we are dealing with mining and we find ourselves having to plunge ourselves to Orania, and the person comes here still believes that the justification. Unfortunately, our democratic discourse allows it to exist. And those views will have to be expressed, and it becomes our duty to rebut them here. So we will get time, that's why I say, we'll get time to deal with some of the issues so that it doesn't become seem to be taken by emotion, but it's taken by superior argument. One issue, please accept my criticism for this one. I think that's why I thought of it for me, that's why I said it's one wanted to meet you. You know, I don't want to say you are divided. The problem is that we are living in a polarized environment. And sometimes we want to put something that is quite stagey.
But the truth of the matter, the moment you put it in writing, as if you are actually unintentionally binding also the same people you are presenting to that view. But if, for instance, it was a view that says, with the previous minister, I'm just making an example, with the vision of the previous minister, we had different contested ideas, but we think with the current one we are finding each other. Now we are dealing with a context. But once it's written in black and white here, it unfortunately put, even if it was not Zwane, then you'd be upfront and Mandash. But, so I'm saying, at some point, maybe it's more of an oversight on such matters. That's the first point. We may, I don't want us to go to the other comparison. It's how you feel that with the new, like I made the example to say, at some point, to appoint a minister and then it's called and then another spider. We hope this time around we'll have stability with the appointment so that people can get enough time. So I would do what I'm just saying on this one, I think in my view, it's one area. The second, one of the key issues I thought I would raise. Look, I think you must help us at some point because first let me say that comparison may not be acceptable. You know, if there's one area that's with the threshold, more than the trade, you know, the threshold is determined by trade, you know, it's parallel. You like it or not in the National Assembly, you never increase those things. They remain like that. You see? So if you want multilateralism, can go there. There is even a percentage of how much you must get in order to get one seat in parliament. The issue, I think for me, it's may not be a correct way, is this the attitude of blocking, not majoritarianism, the attitude of blocking others not to come in when you attain a majority. I would have thought that's the context, so that tomorrow somebody does not live with a perception that, no, in parliament you are much better. This is the most confined. The only way the constitution, in fact, is constitutional. You cannot increase those seats more than 400. You neither you can reduce them below 350. That's what you have. It's a fix. And every percentage is counted. Every percentage you get, the one part that could be correct is that when you look at the voting pattern, that could be correct. When you look at the voting pattern, you can have low voter turnout, but the percentage will still be in relation to the turnout. The problem with the trade unions is that they are at least with that agenda. When you enter, you are a majority, which you seek to say. You want to increase the threshold. Move it, at times you even move it up to 20%, so that others would not come in. This one, it's not subject to members of parliament that they can sleep tomorrow. They are confined. So I think we must deal with that issue. Whether from this committee point of view, is it possible? I think it is more of what we would call a facilitated process. I would lie, you see, the problem with power is one. I'm not saying you will do that yourself. But I can guarantee you, from a trade union point of view, knowing my experience, any trade union that gets the majority, if in the industry, especially in the industry, let alone within part of the industry. If in the mining industry, they were to get whether gold, diamond, they were to be sure that you are almost 90% and so forth, they will increase the threshold. Ah, I can assure you. So that they make it a point that members only look at them as the people who can provide solutions. It's a matter that I'm saying when you get time, let's engage with it. Let's engage with it to what extent from the committee point of view. It can assist. Can it assist them? I don't know. But interest in membership has been a very awkward thing. One last issue, I think I would be more interested, and I hope it won't be an oversight, on our oversight in the context of overlooking this thing. The point that you raised with regard to, which I got down the line, we have to deal with it. the Aurora situation scenario, which is now confronting us, probably in Middleburg, Malawi, and other parts. I think it's a matter that if we're time, we were going to deal with that. We're going to deal with that in the context of avoiding future instances of like that. When we raised the issue, even before it became what it is now in Malawi, we are exactly trying to look at the problems that we have had in that day. But lastly, I don't know that tomorrow will be the employers are coming. They will speak for themselves. Just to bring to your attention so that it's not one vision, one fighting for, or one dimension. On the once empowered principle, always empowered, we will be quite interested to hear from the employer side. The risk is that there is an assumption that first, to generalize it in such a form that there is no specified time frame for a mining advice. There is a renewal process which keeps being. And I like what you are saying, and I think it's a matter that all of us must be interested. I don't think I can actually know which is a matter that must be. The fact remains, and all of the words they come, they must know this. I always say good news. Never, I always say, from a trade union point of view, never allow workers to go on strike when you know you could resolve the strike simply because of attitude. Because by the time they come back, they are worse off than you were before. Equally, never allow something that you can resolve on your own to be resolved by an arbitrator. Because when you come back, the other one is so highly aggrieved, is looking for ways on how to get back and be on the neutral side. The other one is triumphant. That is not what you want. So the point I'm saying, I get the point to say, in my view, we must find a way to assist parties, because once you go to in front of a judge, there must be a winner and a loser. And once there is a winner and a loser, there is a potential of instability and uncertainty. Either way, can you imagine, I'm just saying, that's right, when they come to us, can you imagine if the industry were to lose the case in court? What happened? They control the past. That's a fact. It's a reality. They're in charge. They will go there aggrieved. Even if they do, they do it under duress, whatever they do. Either way, if government loses. So I think this is one part to say. In as much as I always avoid the risk, me is my member. I always avoid the risk where what is supposed to be our view. I know Tenda is not going to agree with me here. If I was that, well, the question asked in the house, and I said, if that question was asked to me, it would have been quite simple to say, you are asking for my opinion. I have a democratic right not to declare it. Because I declared it, that opinion, it may be taken as if it is a right. So in as much as we want to engage, even your friends when you come, I'm not protecting you and your hands for coming late. I'm not protecting you. The fact of the matter, I always say, if your view has got the potential to make you part of others by association of your statement, I prefer to keep my views to myself and state the position of my organization. So that I've heard that in general, I've heard members here asking the question, is this one? It's putting you on the spot. We tend to know, asking for some points about the nationalization. I was interested to know, I wrote some of the things about nationalization. Umeka asked someone about land versus mining. Yeah. The intention at this stage is to deepen and make us better understand what you are supposed to come and take on in the future. So, unfortunately, solidarity, we're still going to be with you here. Don't worry. The next 5 years, we'll be engaging with each other. Well, President of NUM and your team, you were lucky. I'm sure in that letter, if it didn't write, it was not written draft program, it was a mistake. You were lucky that you came in before we say it closed. You can come. You'll get a place to sit here. It's your turn. No term extension is better. No term extension. You will introduce your team into the lab.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, and the portfolio committee in the House, Energy, and the Labour, which is Solidarity, and WASA. I don't see President Matunga here, but in absence, we also want to extend our salute to him. And the small scale money. Leadership we show Ms. Hartdeve. We want to apologize for coming late. In actual fact, the problem was that the arrangement that we made by officials has made us come late. We'll correct this in the future. Our presentation from the introduction point of view, it does really, I think, you have it. Mining, energy, and industries have always been the backbone of the South African economy with an enormous contribution to the growth, domestic product. The mining industry has a recorded employment of 464.66% workforce, while Eskom has about 46,700 in total workforce for the 2019 financial year. Despite the recorded decline in the mining industry and the prevailing challenges at Eskom, there is still a growth potentially for both sectors to make a significant contribution to the South African economy. South Africa mineral endowment accounts to a proportion of the world production and reserves, which include among many precious metals and minerals, energy minerals, non-ferrous metals and minerals, ferrous minerals and industrial minerals, to which some of these commodities are used to produce South Africa's lowest cost of electricity. According to the U.S. Geological Survey of 2019, South Africa's total reserves remain in the world's most vulnerable resources with an estimated worth of 20.3 trillion. Applying the correct strategies and equity distribution in investment, South Africa will indeed be a better place for all of us, labor, business, communities. The National Union of Mine Workers believe that the mining and energy industries both have the potential to contribute directly and indirectly to poverty alleviation, cap job losses, and to close the inequality gap. Section 8, we are dealing with mining industry challenges and opportunities. The National Union of Mine Workers is optimistic about the future of the mining industry. The Minister of Mineral and Energy Resources recently made a pronouncement that there are 60 mining projects in planning stages with an investment value of 110 billion until 2020. It is a public knowledge that small businesses have a potential to increase employment. It will beneficially for the Department of Mineral Energy to place considerable emphasis on artisanal mining. This work must be coordinated with the other relevant departments to sustain existing jobs and to achieve the inverted employment rate as outlined in the National Development Plan Vision 2030. Under beneficiation, MPRDA 2020-2002, as amended section 26, allows of the country to benefit a percentage of its commodities working with the Department of Trade and Industry, noticeable. The program in its form is supposed to contribute to the transformation and job creation for the mining industry. South Africa is exporting raw materials while importing finished products. This is a missed opportunity for local economic stimulation and a loss in our economy. Mining companies do process some of their commodities, however, they often do not want to invest into beneficiation. The gaps as the limited vested interest and directive from the custodian of the program remains a challenge, and the lack of infrastructure development from local communities to further participate in procurement opportunities from beneficiation is limiting. Localization can contribute to an increased investment to local supplier base, such as manufacturing and PEE. Transportation and clerical services could bolster job creation. Given the large procurement footprint of the mining sector, a concentrated strategy to promote localization of production and services in South Africa, including the capital goods sector, could materially grow the country's manufacturing sector and industrial base. Under the social labor plan was introduced to respond to socio-economic development in mining communities and labor-sending areas. Instead, companies implemented program as a mere compliance target, which in turn generated a host of practical problems and has been trailed by a leaf of non-compliance. IRR policy brief 2016, the NUM supports the call by the committee 2018 to the department to establish a framework to ascertain mechanisms for better coordination and implementation of social labor plans, including mechanism to align SLBs, LSPs, with the integrated development plan to contribute to a larger social challenges. A better transparency, inter-institutional coordination and enforcement will yield commended results. This is one developmental element of the mining sector that with a substantial policy support can contribute to long-term infrastructure. Under mining charter, procurement, localization, the work of African Exploration, Mining and Finance Corporation is central to the development posture of the mining industry. South Africa's rationale for local content is to develop a new industry and strengthen the domestic industrial base in an attempt to stimulate job creation and economic development. The state-owned corporation must take advantage of partnerships and collaborate opportunities provided by the Industrial Development Corporation to fund localization through local produced minerals to enable access to job funds to enhance projects which are customized to local circumstances, while tapping into some of the empowerment funds within the institution. Stimulations, the institution must support the Black Industrialist Program, prioritizing youth and women. The AEMF must unlock mining so the secondary industries to advance women participation and unleash the youth potential as the future entrepreneurs while implementing the principles embedded in the broad-based Black empowerment. And the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework, Act 5 of 2000, the SOE must fund local manufacturers to leverage procurement capacity to drive transformation as well as create jobs. In the mining industry, for instance, you will find that there are some derelinked staff that are coming from outside the ground, that in some crushers companies they are able to manufacture bricks, tiles and other things. These are areas whereby women and the ex-mine workers and youth can participate if there is an interrelated kind of a framework from the municipality and the labor and the community leaders to participate on such. Instead, certain individuals that benefit on that. Employee shareholder scheme, transformation and ownership has a greater impact to workers through the ESOPs. The employer share scheme must be streamlined through a framework in order to increase participation. Community trust continue to present challenges more than solutions to our participation. Community trust continue to present challenges, yeah, and solutions on our community government and must through a framework that clearly define a community leader and provide clear demarcation boundaries. I think you know the story of the D account of Marikana, whereby billions of money has just disappeared. And nobody is accounting on this, either the Northwest government, the company, or community leaders. So that's why we are saying it must be defined that who is a community leader. And the government must be central to evaluate and checks and balances of the money that is put on accounts of SMEs. It must not just be used by Chiefs and Chiefs and his council for his own. We are saying that ESOPs and community trust schemes are important as they are generating a more broad-based ownership in the mining sector. While the mining sector supports the situation objectives, monitoring must be strengthened and consequently, there is a need for governments to introduce regulation of a framework to ensure consistency and compliance. The problem here is that we have the shareholding scheme in different mines and they have different types because there is no principles or framework as to how this thing should be established. And to be frank, Manuka does not benefit in this thing. It is only Comba Resource, I think 4 years ago, whereby workers were able to get 500,000 each from the shareholding scheme. From that, no any, these schemes are paying workers very, very less because there are no clear guidance as to how this thing must be established. We think that the government must help us to establish and to make an international cycle on this thing so that principles can be established to put the framework so that all mines must be channeled to do what is equal to everybody. Women in the mining strategy, according to the OECD 2017 state, that there's a need for an effective strategy to curb gender gaps to encompass a number of policy domains, including measures to help reconcile work with family responsibilities. South African women make up of 51.3% of the population, but in the mining sector, out of approximately 464,667 jobs, only 12%. Of 53,179 are held by women. The NUM commends DMR for introducing the strategy. The strategy was introduced, Women in Mining Strategy, to strengthen women empowerment through industry diversification and advance women participation in the mining industry. We however concern that this strategy adopted the BEE transformational approach that considers professionals take advantage of the opportunities presented for the ADSA individuals. Yeah, you find professionals coming into the mine and you have mining women who are working at the mine that are not benefiting from this. Maybe this thing should be clarified so that you just the rural women who are not professionals must also have the right to participate. Women participation in the sector is moving at a slow pace, and the strategy through legislation enforcement and strategy implementation, there must be a quantifiable outcome. Junior and small-scale mining. The National Union of Miners adopted a resolution in 2016 that illegal mining must be legalized. A conscious decision was taken in understanding the detrimental effect of poverty in South Africa. However, the union does not condone illegal activities to manage the process. Government must take concerted effort and be proactive to determine modalities to legalize and regulate the sector. You know, these illegal miners are making a lot of billions out of this. And we believe that there's an international syndicate where they are selling their commodities. Where do they sell their diamonds and gold? So how do we fold our hands as South Africans and lead few individuals to benefit, because this is again an international monopoly of our minerals by the Black Market International. So we have to legalize this thing and put regulations and make sure that the health and safety and employment growth, it is implemented in this area. The growing mining industry is dependent on opening up the sector to more dynamic and competitive players. If these people, they have some kind of skills that are mining illegally, let's put them in a framework of legality so that they can continue to produce, but hire more people so that they cannot just benefit as individuals. South Africa, like any other African country, in SADC regionally, specifically in gold mining sector, it is commonly confronted by a serious challenge of illegal mining. According to the CIRDI 2017 through the weather, an estimated 30 million artisanal and small-scale miners extract about 30 mineral commodities using artisanal techniques in almost all developing countries, and gold is the dominant commodity mined by artisanal and small-scale miners. In the South African context, and small-scale miners who operate illegally are called the Lazama Group, which means trying lucky. This mainly dominates the Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng province, and also Northwest. And the activities are taking place in old, as is used there, and safe abandoned mines. Health and safety. Under health and safety, we remain as an area of concern across all the sectors, and women are more vulnerable across the sector. Today, the mining industry has left several families in the destitute emanating from the mine fatalities and the seismic caused by fall of ground. We believe that the frequency of safety talks can eliminate injuries and fatalities in the working place, strengthening enforcement, continuous monitored health and safety inspection and strict measures to non-compliance could yield positive results. Africa Mining Vision 2030 promotes broader-based sustainability growth and socio-economic development. Therefore, health and safety is a central focus to develop the implementation of the health, safety and environmental standards across the mining industry. The health and safety compliance is a priority for the National Union of Mining Workers. We do not support nor promote an unsafe places. The call on the committee to review current mine health and safety, to introduce a punitive sanction to the managers, the executives, and the shareholders. This intervention will highlight the seriousness of health and safety of workers. More importantly, companies will not budget for non-compliance, but will understand that a human life is worth more than they could afford. This is the only way that industry can achieve commitments outlined in the culture of transformation. I think there's something which it is not written there, Comrade Jefferson and the committee, that also since 2012 there has been some kind of violence in the mining industry, whereby mine workers are dying because of sometimes when they strike. We're coming from Sabani, 9 people have died and 2 children died in the Free State where their house was burned down when they were inside the house. We call upon the committee to institute a commission on probing the syndicates that are operating in the mining industry for killing mine workers and their families. It cannot be just left unattended when people are dying, especially when there's a strike. So that call, please institute a commission to investigate the syndicates that are sponsored. We don't believe that people just go and shoot or just burn houses. They take instructions somewhere. So that must be investigated. Under Table 1.1 illustrates the latest mining sector incidents per category. The staff report a slight improvement in almost the classified incidents. However, the NUM is not totally convinced as long as companies have not attained zero harm. Modernization, mechanization, automation, job losses. The NUM view modernization of mines in the form of mechanization as a mechanism to promote competitiveness and health and safety. We do not oppose the use of machines entirely specifically in areas where mines have existed more than a decade and they are too deep on the ground for workers. However, the socio-economic effects of the program are placing the workers as a destitute with the current unemployment rate at 29% of South Africa cannot afford to share jobs through modern application. We understand the negative effect that the use of the machines on labor complement and the communities in which the mining companies operate. The problem here is that the machines that are being used in the mining are being imported from Europe. There's a mine there in the Northern Cape, is called PMC. It's owned by the Chinese. While I was there, I found that the whole machinery there is written in Chinese language. The trucks, the bulldozers and everything. Why then, if we go for this modernization, for this automation, can't we introduce our own manufacturing in the country so that we can supply the machine? Because that will increase employment. The NUF does not support the current approach by companies of using the machine instead of warm bodies. And we propose a mitigation plan to adopt, to be adopted. We would like to lobby the committee to support the NUF in its call to the Department of Mineral and Energy Resource to regulate the mining sector modernization program. Companies who wish to modernize their operation must devise modernization plans with clear intention, target and evaluate the impact that the program will have on the workers. Anyone is of the view that modernization should contribute to the fast-growing manufacturing sector of the economy. Of course, if we are manufacturing the machines that will be used in modernization, modernization should also encompass procurement and supply chain management to improve efficiency and to eliminate nepotism and corruption. That is what Ines Chenga said in 2018 during his start. The modernization program must consider the following. Skill development, reskilling those workers who have been lost jobs in the mining industry, localization, the machines must be built and maintained in South Africa. Corporate tax, companies that wish to modernize must be taxed to bolster job-intensive industries. Business rescue and care maintenance. Our past experience with mine closure is that most of companies do not comply with mine legislation and instruments. Then they fail the process to receive their operating license and also derail the process to replace of rubbish mining equipment. Mining care maintenance must include the duration to which the process will take and the extent of the outcomes. This negligence costs the workers and their extended families their lives. You know, this business rescue, they stay more than 5 years. There's no period. And in the process, they are amassing a lot of millions and workers are suffering. And these mines, companies that are putting mines under care maintenance, it is because the mine was the reserve. They don't want to sell the mine. They want to punish workers only. There's no reason of a person, if the mine is not producing, to put it on sale so that anyone can buy it. And I think I want to refer to the agreement that we signed under DMR in 2016, November, which is 10 points, which outlines what should be done about a mine which is found lacking to produce by the owner. Because we said that the owner must put the mine on sale, or either the owner should partnership with other companies that come from outside, or either the owner should surrender the mine to the department. Yeah, it is there in that 10 points. The process must be within limited time frame of 2 years. We are proposing 2 years for both liquidators and business rescues, that they must have a template. And within 6 months, there must be evaluation. This is going to be an amendment of Company Act, which sometimes does not fall under your jurisdiction. Respectively, to address the persisting challenges, the appointed business rescue must take the responsibility to oversee the continuity of the maintenance, the care maintenance plan. Climate change, impact and transition. As anyone acknowledge and confirm the realities that the climate action seeks to address. However, employment protection and creation is central as an effort to conform to the trade union call for just transition process. According to the Industrial Development Corporation, or nominal value terms since 2016 as a result of weak global demand and substantially lower prices. The mining industry has proved to be more vulnerable and dependent to the global commodity and commodity. Its sustainability. The climate change seems to be an additional downturn to an industry that is already declining, while other factors such as mine depletion and weak investor appetite, which leads to joblessness, seem to have an additional negative impact in the future of the South African mining industry. The paradigm shift of compliance to an acceptable carbon footprint of below 2 degrees Celsius by 2030 must in every way take cognizance of the unintended consequences which could result to increased poverty, inequality and unemployment. The NYMEN's National Executive Committee meeting of 2017 called for government to declare the job losses in the mining industry as a national crisis. The decision was informed by the continued retrenchment, a trend emanated from a sluggish economic growth, the climate change, detrimental effect on job will delegitimize South African commitments to the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals to alleviate poverty by 2030, as affirmed by the National Development Vision of 2030. The relevant departments, through intergovernmental relations, must ensure that workers and communities are protected in central decisions taken to comply with Paris Agreement and make sure that carbon tax funds, reskilling programs, and establishment of alternatives. Because employers are using retrenchment as a way of punishing workers, we believe that the Labor Relations Act must be amended, that 1 week is not sufficient of paying workers, at least 3 weeks of every working year, so that we must make retrenchment more expensive to avoid massive retrenchment. The increase in introduction of mix into the South African legislative and policy framework has caused disagreement among the energy sector stakeholders. The decision to invest heavily on renewable energy, public transport energy efficiency, waste management and land restoration initiative countrywide has influenced the policy direction to commit to an increased generation capacity to 40% in 2010. The UNM has always viewed the independent power producers program as an ESCOM privatizing mechanism, and opposing this manufactured partnership will save thousands of jobs, not only in the energy sector, but even in the mining. The modality of the agreement of IPPs and ESCOM, it is in such a way that it is corrupt in nature, because the ESCOM has to pay the IPPs 2.23 rand, while ESCOM sells at 89% to consumers. This thing must be stopped. Otherwise, the money will be put at ESCOM, and that money will go down deep the hole. Because it doesn't make business sense to buy goods in a higher price and you sell them in a lower price. If these independent power producers are really independent, let them cut ties with ESCOM and stay there as an independent business people and play a role of generating power and energy for consumers. Let not that come and eat from the fiscal of ESCOM. This issue is going to collapse our economy. We are appealing to you that this agreement of IPPs must be terminated. Energy legislation and policy, I ask it. Environmental and consent pose challenges to the coal to continue as an energy generation source. Not only does the burning of coal cause air pollution, or also through extracting the coal have a severe impact on the environment. The advances in technology are providing us with opportunity for government and industry to invest in current technology. There's a technology which reduces air pollution of coal. That's where we have to focus. And the problem here is that there are some banks, like Standard Bank and other banks, that have decided that they will never fund any project of coal. If we have banks that will select as to where to fund, but we, as citizens, we are putting our money in such banks, I don't think it's healthy. are now starting to dictate and they are downgrading our economy. Because coal is being used not only in South Africa, I mean, India, just recently Egypt has built a massive coal station. They need coal. America and China, the most polluters in the world, have not signed this thing of running the climate. We are not saying that we don't support the reducement of pollution. We're saying there must be a technology which will reduce pollution from coal, but we have a light deposit of coal that cannot be left unattended. Just imagine if Botswana would say the diamonds cannot be used. What's going to happen? Because they depended on it. We depended on these minerals. We need government and procurement to adopt the integrated resource policy on energy. We, however, remain concerned with percentage of distribution of energy mix outlined in the policy, specifically the position for renewable energy. The sector is not sustainable and the country cannot rely on it on investment on the storage. Renewable energy and IPPs, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development Report 2016, South Africa has 18 highest environmentally related tax revenue among the 34 OECD revenue compared to the 70% of the rest of the OECD countries. The NOM is not entirely opposing compliance with South African Paris Agreement commitment. However, if the IPPs want to provide electricity to South Africans, let them generate. Each policy must be created an able environment that allows the IPPs to build their own transmission and infrastructure and establish their own line base. This will enable the independent power producers to own the entire electricity value chain from production, transmission and electricity trading, while they also have the opportunity to determine their own cost to the consumer. Gas exploration, black industrialists. The NOM supports the government effort to increase the electricity generation as part of energy mix policy projections. The introduction of gas bill strengthens the electrification program to allow more households to have access to affordable electricity. Furthermore, gas and oil sectors are among the key focus areas identified to benefit the black industrialist program. Government, as part of interdepartmental relations, must align its work with the DTI to enable the strengthened black industrialist program to achieve South Africa transformation agenda. The gas and oil sector expansion will create jobs and contribute to a sustainable economic growth of the surrounding communities. What is left from this is that government must own 60% of the oil and gas and create sovereignty fund which will cater for infrastructure development of the country. We have countries like your Saudi Arabia, like United Arab Emirates, which have only oil, but they are the most richest country in the world. Not only the rich country, but people are living a decent life because that particular mineral is used for transformation of the lives of people. So let us not take this oil and gas again and give it 100% to individuals, and we left our people being destitute. Eskom policy and governance, Captain Oyedesin. We are calling for an audit at Eskom. That's the National Union of Mine Workers. We need your support. An audit must audit this price of the IPPs and the consumer price, and audit also the issue of the price of companies that are buying, that Eskom is buying electricity from them. It seems like that, let me not say it seems, it is a clear report that we got that Eskom, it has different agreements with different companies. Some companies are paid a high price for their coal. Others are paid low. So there is no standard that is set at Eskom as to how much coal should be paid per ton. We need an international standard here.
And what must be audited again here, it is the procurement at ESCO. There are machines there which are called transformers, which were bought by a certain project manager from Europe. And he was tipped by the engineers that these machines are not going to work. They are not equal to South African standard. But he bought the machine anyway. The machine are sitting there, they are doing nothing. So we believe that it is not only the machines. There are procurement kind of corruption involved. So ESCOM must be audited. Yeah, it must be audited because there are a lot of things there. Even the selling of energy itself to bigger companies. We want an audit to determine whether these companies are paying the equal price to the equal energy that they got from ESCOM. We will be sitting here and saying ESCOM can't make profits, but there are a lot of things that are happening. Remember, these IPPs have been paid 20 billion since April last year, 2018, until now. IPPs have been paid 20 billion. ESCOM is paying 110 million a month to IPPs. If the IPPs were not paid this money, the loss that ESCOM has of 21 billion will not be the case. So, if we don't stand up and audit this ESCOM and clean corruption at ESCOM, we will pour money here every year and nothing will happen. We view the ESCOM unbundling structuring process as a mechanism to force workers to pay for the incompetency, maladministration caused by lack of oversight from the Department of Public Enterprise. In fact, countries like Ghana and Zimbabwe, they unbundled long ago. They are now disbanding. How do you, if it, the problem is the cash flow, it's money at ESCOM, then you establish four boards. You have a holding company, you have distribution, transmission, and other. And you have the CEOs and the executives and managers, and then board of directors. You increase cost in terms of payment, but then you say you are doing something that is going to help the entity. This is the mechanism of collapsing ESCOM and to privatize it, which we are against. The National Union of Managers has a substantial input to advocate and lobby the committee support to enable strengthen stakeholders' relation to enable both the committee and NUM to benefit or labor significantly. The NUM is not totally opposing modernization, okay. I think we are about to. Is it? Okay. Is it? It's not a repetition. The NUM is not totally opposing a modernization. However, it is important that all stakeholders define their position in response to changing environment in the mining sector. Further, we are open to participate in a meaningful discussion to advise a just transition. We therefore call upon the Department of Minerals to regulate modernization and Department of Treasury to introduce corporate tax. The health and safety is alarming in all the mining sector. The call to Department of Minerals and Energy to establish a commission to probe the extent to which workers are killed in the mining industry, not only by accidents underground, but also even through violence. We know the effort by the department to bring MPRDA to Parliament, busy role as a response to the PC and Mineral and Energy Resources call during the budget vote in July 2019. We support the view as it was important even in 2013 when the bill appeared in Parliament. However, we are concerned that the withdrawal has a financial implication to which the department never considered, and none of the members of parliament, neither DA or TF, have rejected the stance. Beneficiation is one of the promising programs within the mining industry to bolster job creation, which affects intergovernmental relations between DMRE and DTI. The program could contribute to South African economy. It is one of the programs that could benefit the Black Industrialist Program. Furthermore, benefits program must be aligned to the strategic minerals production. Here, we believe that we can send our students to China and other countries to go and learn manufacturing. And we can also lobby manufacturers from those countries to come and establish firms in our country. What is hard with that? To establish manufacturing. Because we cannot continue with education, which promotes people produce what is called education for self-reliance, people that can produce, instead of queuing to get a job. We have we are members of the BRICS. Why can't we send people to go and we select issues that can be manufactured by our own minerals in this country, like jewelry, like cell phones and others. Kagame has done it in his own country in Rwanda because he's producing minerals that manufacture cell phones. He told Japan that they must come out and establish factories in Rwanda. That's what those cell phones can be manufactured in Rwanda. And it is happening. Why can't we do it here? Effective interdepartmental relations and better coordination will enhance delivery of the social labor plan accompanied by the framework to implement social labor plans will address many, most of the unprecedented challenges. The NOM is optimistic that with the framework and streamlined coordinated SLB, we will qualify to contribute to the infrastructure development in mining areas. The challenge of illegal mining is an international element. I think we have spoken much more about the illegal mining. Energy South Africa's growth electrification program requires a stable baseload to enable affordable electricity generation. Investing in technology clean South African coal reserves will be far more lesser than the unreliable renewable energy expansion at the expense of job orientation, retention, and creation. The use of diesel run the oil country terminal goods is unsustainable and must be discouraged. The 2018 IRP allocates 15% to gasification electricity production as part of the energy mix in support of the gas bill, which will allow unlimited exploration of 15%. It's rather too small to open up the sector to different role players and to encourage competitiveness, and according to the IRP, 2018 gas will be used to back up the solar and wind during the night, and when the wind is not blowing, it is clear that the renewable can't survive without additional investment in advanced technology storage. We are more certain that IPPs are a privatization program which will benefit the few, taking no consideration for workers in energy and the sector. The proposed mix allocated 46% to coal, 2.5% to nuclear is not going to assist in the achieving the security of supply. South Africa's current electrification can only use coal, nuclear as a base load until such time we can storage capacity of electricity produced by wind turbines and solar power. The ESCOM policy development support and governance managed by different departments does not assist the state-owned enterprise with its mandate to contribute to country's sustainable growth, considering all the challenges that overwhelm the SOE. Integrating the work for the two departments into one would benefit South Africa. Government must integrate ESCOM governance into the Department of Energy to enable better coordination of the SOE. In conclusion, the NOM is not intended for opposing development, which seeks to implement international treaties. However, government commitment must be aligned with South African realities and must be informed by the unacceptable levels of unemployment, the continued inequality gap, and the scale of poverty which affect our poor people. The mining industry must continue to exist within the complex evolution world of production and contribute to the South African economic growth by strengthening beneficiation opportunities, public strategic minerals, and expand the market to allow more entrepreneurs to participate. Families continue to be victims of negligence in the mining, energy, and industry, and families are left in a destitute because of non-accountability. ESCOM corruption must be addressed, policy certainty and governance must be integrated to be managed by a single department. And that is the conclusion of our presentation, Chairperson. We will take questions collectively. I am the president of the National Union of Mine Workers. Next to me is Nkosa Zana. She is a parliamentary officer for the National Union of Mine Workers. Yeah.
think some of them are
they have to go back to Johannesburg. Those who are
why
one, I can even make a comment to lobby this group in to say that it is something that one will carry and also advance as a member of this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Once again, through you, Chair, thank you very much. NUM. Yeah. Honestly, this is a report. I mean, this is a nice presentation, if I may say. Yeah, it's very nice to hear that. I just wonder, how did you lose your membership to AMCO or something? I just wonder how that came. But maybe it was your wake-up call because you seem to be awakened now. All what we are saying here is true. Of these examples that you made from other countries that producing, and then also inviting other countries to come and build refineries and all those things. That's a very good idea. It's in fact in our manifesto here, Chair. Okay, I'm not there today, but what I'm trying to say here is we welcome your representation. It makes a lot of sense. And then look, we're here as a committee, much as we're here to build each other here, going forward, for the sake of the country. As we said that earlier on, if something it does not make sense, it does not make sense, and this is the area, this is the place where we must reject it with the content that it deserves. So that building the country going forward, we're together for the sake of our people, who voted for us, of course, to come here and represent them. So you are making a lot of sense of what you are saying, except if it's just a window dressing or lip service. Much as I say that I wonder why did you lose membership, but I'm not necessarily there today because maybe you just talk, you don't implement, which is fine. But then, lastly, because I don't necessarily want to waste time, you mentioned a lot of things. It's exactly how we understand it, taking the economy of this country going forward. It's very much acceptable, your report or your presentation, except the fact that you came late. I think we need to warn you in a way, sort of, that please take this committee as serious as you are taking yourself. Because remember, when you come late here, you come late, much late, and then you come here, you present something very good like this, then you won't take it serious for just, because it seems like you are not taking yourself serious. Now, how can we take you serious if you come late? So my humble request to you, Enam, please, next time, take this committee serious. And also what you have just presented today, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and take it serious yourself. And then going forward, helping each other, we will find each other on this one. Sure. Thank you, Chair. Oh, that's right. No, thank you, Chair. Mungameli, I hear in your presentation you spoke that we only have 12% of women in the mining sector. And I think I must say that is quite unacceptable. Worst of all, that there are mines that even when they hire today, let me say they hire 200 people, more than 100 of them would still be male, despite the fact that we have got this challenge. So how do we suggest that as a committee we deal with this particular problem? Two, on your challenges, you spoke about the Procurement Act and regulation serving as a hindrance to local contact. How can the committee assist in improving this mining challenge? On illegal mining, I think any sector worth 14.4 billion, there's nobody who can argue that we can't, it's only a challenge. No, I think there's an opportunity there. So how do you suggest we go about, as the cadre said, to make sure that we legalize illegal mining? Because I think it's a very first challenge. We don't need to be paying lip service to that particular challenge because a lot of our people are actively involved in that sector. There's also an issue, but you spoke about towards an end, that there is a lot of violence and intolerance
especially in the platinum belt. How would you suggest that the department and the committee were able to assist in dealing with that challenge? You also spoke on the question of health and safety, that the culture of transformative framework is not fully implemented at plant level, that there is a lack of commitment from the employer, which is a challenge I think that has always been there in the mining sector, of employers doing as they wish with the safety of our miners. How do you suggest that as a committee we come with frameworks or guidelines or any other thing that would be able to ensure that we mitigate this particular challenge? Yeah, I think I will end there for now. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. A couple of things. First of all, NUM, you said that you were not opposed to modernization, and your proposed solution was to bring Chinese manufacturers to South Africa, to send people over to China, etc., etc. That was along the lines of your proposed solution. My question is this. For the mine owner, it's more cost effective to just buy from whoever the supplier is. It's not up to the mine owner to decide, you know, well, we must bring Chinese manufacturers here, or we must send our people to China. Let me just buy the equipment and train my people to use it. Do you see that as a possible modernization strategy, or are you opposed to that? That's the first question. The second goes to business rescue, and I need to understand something here. You said that the purpose of business rescue at the moment appears to be to punish the workers. And I'd like to understand why we would want to punish the workers. I'd like to understand why business rescue, which is a piece of legislation that was passed by Parliament a couple of years ago and put in place to ensure the sustainability of mines, of organizations, would want to punish the workers. That's the first part of that question. The second part of that question is, you said that they are making billions from business rescue. I'd like to understand who the they is. Is it the owner of the operation? Is it the business rescue practitioner? Who is the they that you're talking about so that I can understand where the problem lies? Then, if we could just go to energy for a second. My first question on energy is this. You said Eskom is a disaster. Do you agree that Eskom is overstaffed? We have various reports that say that Eskom is overstaffed by a factor of about 3. In other words, we should have about a third of the number of employees at Eskom. And so I'd like to understand if you agree that Eskom is overstaffed.
Tomorrow we don't get something that says we entered a terrain of Eskom, which is opposed by operations and staffing, all those things, to be
sure.
A matter of the committee on public interference. I'm just saying
sure.
so that tomorrow I don't get a call from the chairperson in public interference that asks me, what do you have to do with
it? I didn't bring it up, they brought it up. They brought up Eskom and
no,
the structure.
That's why I said when they finished, I said.
Okay, now I understand that.
No, but it's okay. I'm just saying, I don't want tomorrow. I don't know what the rules of Parliament say. That's the point I'm trying to say. But I'm not stopping you.
Okay.
But I will be very skeptical to enter issues.
I'm just curious. I mean, it's just in terms of the bigger picture of energy,
okay.
Because it goes to how do we define an energy mix.
Okay.
And I mean, one of the criticisms that came from the NUM allow for renewables into the energy mix, or not so much not allow, but that renewables were causing job losses, etc. So I'm just trying to understand whether they agree. Okay. Moving on to IPPs, and I just want to be very clear on this. NUM, you are proposing that IPPs must be allowed to sell electricity directly to consumers. Do you agree that they should be allowed to sell directly to municipalities? Should they be allowed to sell directly to large customers? I want to understand. I mean, you put it here, you said, if the IPPs want to provide electricity to South Africa, the legislation and electricity generation policy must create an enabling environment that allows the IPP to build their own transmission infrastructure and establish it. So you're okay with them then selling directly to Cape Town or Stellenbosch or Buffalo City or whoever it might be. Then on your last slide, your general comments, you spoke about the very first paragraph. You call on the Department of Mineral Resources to regulate modernization. I understand where you're going with that. And the Department of Treasury to introduce corporate tax. We already have corporate tax. So what are you wanting them to introduce? Then in your third paragraph, I just need clarity as to which stance was not rejected. I understand that the bill was withdrawn by the department, so I'd like to know which stance was not rejected by the DA or the EFF that you referred to there. Then the last question I have. So you spoke about a procurement manager who had purchased transformers that were not suitable for the South African environment. My question to you is this. What have you done to report that to law enforcement? What have you done as the NUM, who has been now informed of this matter, to address the corruption in terms of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act? Because that's what that is in contravention of. And it places an onus on every single person who becomes aware of it to report it to law enforcement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I want to first welcome the report detailed and I think the first thing is that we need to jealously guard the interest of the people of South Africa in relation to the commodities, the economy, the jobs and so forth. Therefore, for me, it's troublesome when you make mention of a certain mine in the Northern Cape that is owned by the Chinese, where they bring the machinery they use from China, even the trucks they use from China, I could even assume, even the workforce can even come from China, whereas we as South Africans should be benefiting from anything that is being done in the country. Now, it takes me to the issue of, we discussed the issue of ownership earlier on. It's unfortunate you were not around when we spoke about we as South Africa need to own the minerals and conduct every business in a manner that benefits us. Now, the issue of beneficiation, would it not be wise or prudent from your side if it has certain time frames? Because you find that now, beneficiation, we're going to talk about it now. Could be that 5 years from now, they were talking about it then, but nothing tangible is being done. Now, would it not be prudent to have certain time frames to say, perhaps in the next 20 years, want to have full beneficiation? Now, for that to happen, let us not wait for 20 years later. Let us start now when we say 10% must be fully beneficiated and so forth. Now, the second question, which is the question of illegal mining, I'm very curious to find out, when you say it must be made legal, what exactly do you mean? And how exactly do you mean it so that it can benefit the government as well as the people of South Africa? However, I want to bring to your attention the issue of the syndicates. It would be very difficult for us, including laymen, to understand or to know who are the syndicates. Now, for you as a labor union that has been part of the industry for a very long time, you are best placed to understand or know who might be these syndicates, because you work in the industry. You've got eyes fully flat on the ground, and ears fully flat on the ground to understand what is being said and what is being done. Now, the syndicates that are running the show, because it's very easy to go after the Zamazamas because they're easy targets, but the true culprits are these syndicates. So I wanted to find out, now when it comes to the syndicates, are you not best placed, for example, to advise the police, advise all of the law enforcement agencies as to who's running the show, because you are there and you understand or you have better knowledge of the systems. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Maybe let me join the honorable members in welcoming the presentation. That was good, spoiled by the late coming to the portfolio committee. I want to pick up from what the honorable member spoke about in terms of illegal mining and syndicates. You know, there's a friend of mine here who told me, I think yesterday, that they went to an oversight chair somewhere in Kruger National Park. By that gate in Mpumalanga, I think it has a view. So they had an opportunity to be taken to a helicopter. So as and when they were rounding up with the helicopter, this friend of mine see a lot of very nice houses, very nice big houses. The ones that those that are outside do not have. He asked the question, hey, these big houses, what is the means of production? What, where are these people working? The person who is the tour guide responds and says, no, these ones are rhino poachers, right? These ones are, but you know they are rhino poachers and they must be illegal. He says, yeah, we know. Now, the point I'm trying to make is that you made a point that this illegal mining has to be supported by some kind of, and you did mention international syndicates, international black syndicates. Yes. Now a direct question, could it be that you are like that tour guide who knows who are syndicates in that sector, but says, we see them. Before we go to legalizing the illegal mining.
Point of order, Chair. Chair. Yeah, sorry, Chair. The member, the area where the member is referring is exactly where I stay. I'm not a rhino poacher.
No, thanks for the point of order. Let me sustain it on behalf of the chair. But that is the question. That are you not like those that taken the concept international market in the fore. So could it be that you know something? You need us to assist you in whatever way we are capable and capacitated to do as a committee to apprehend these kind of illegal mining before we even make them legal. Thanks.
Okay.
No, thank you very much, Chair and the committee. Maybe we lost membership because we were growing very fast. You know, the organization which is growing fast. We are at 400,000. So to serve people in that, you have, like Rustenburg, we have 120,000 members, but in one region, with only 12 organizers. So it was a mess, it was a mistake that we take it. Maybe before I deal with how the illegal should be legalized, let me talk to the issue that was raised about, do we know who is international syndicate, comrade, we don't know the person as such, but you will remember the history of Angola. Savimbi was controlling the area where there were a lot of banks. Now, the government tried to bring him into government to become a vice president. Dos Santos, even though it was an arrangement that he will never be the president of a PLA. It was like when Leclerc was made the good president, trying to secure peace. He agreed, but this international syndicate, which he took diamonds to them, they said to him, stop this. And he returned to the forest. So gold does not been manufactured in South Africa. We don't have any manufacturing of gold. Obviously, gold goes outside the country. It must go outside the country. Like the gold that is refined in Jimiston. From Jimiston, it goes abroad. That's what we are referring to. But the processes of taking this gold outside of the country, how does it happen if there are no international syndicates that are working with the farmers? So that is what we don't have names of people, but obviously, this is done by the international syndicates because of the process of how gold should leave the country to outside. And then, illegal miners to be made legal. Maybe the term is language, or the term is not right. Ghana and Nigeria and some countries has looked into this opportunity whereby illegal miners were mining. So they went there and made a research of how much of the deposit of the commodities there and so on. Then they came to them and said, look, we are taking this because it belongs to us as the state. We are taking this operation. However, because you were mining here, we will transform you. Give you training and regulate you, meaning that you are no longer going to sell and take money. We are going to pay you. You see? That is what we have to do. Obviously, it's foreigners that are dominating illegal mining in South Africa, especially, or let me mention the country which we look like it is xenophobia. But it's foreigners that are dominating illegal mining. Yes, of course, you are right. Okay. Yeah, no, I understand the context you're referring to. They have adopted the PAC model of Colonel Nkrumah, which I support even myself, of Africans living in their own continent before those fences that were put by colonialists amongst ourselves. So, yes, here, we have to make sure that we transform. We transform illegal mining activities or illegal operations into government owned. And here, when we do this, we don't give again to companies. Government established companies like your exploration, what, which I don't see it doing anything better than other companies. You know, our things are not well, but the government must find a way of taking these mines and transforming these workers to be reskilled and to be regulated. We cannot just chase them out because they are going to look for another thing to make it illegal. So that's what we are saying in terms of illegal mining. On the issue of modernization, or maybe the issue of IPPs. The issue of IPPs, we are saying IPPs must contract must be terminated from Eskom. But because we cannot say people must not do business, it is free. South Africa is free. Anyone can do business of any kind. They can establish themselves, but not taking money from Eskom. As a business entity, which is they can sell to everyone. We can't put laws to say you must not sell to municipalities, you must not sell to... But if they are an established business and they are able to sell their electricity, remember, energy market is very broad. South Africa, Eskom is not only generating electricity for South Africans. They have to sell to Botswana, to Zimbabwe, and there's a major outside demand of energy. So they can establish themselves and sell to whoever. Maybe the area where we also did not speak to is the area where Eskom is giving municipality electricity and municipality is not paying back. 18 billion, which is owed to Eskom. So it is easier. We have to establish a prepaid system that a person should buy electricity. Even at a lower price, the poor must buy it at a lower price. Or if there is a law which says, no, the poorest of the poor can be taken free. Yes, let it happen, but people must buy electricity. People must buy electricity. This is happening in Botswana, Swaziland and elsewhere. So here, we are giving municipality the electricity, they sell the electricity, they don't give back money to Eskom. It's another contributor to the decline of Eskom. Transformers, yeah. Well, these transformers, last week, we had a whistleblower who came to our office to tell us about transformers that are sitting there at Eskom. I think we are here at Portfolio Committee, of which we are not aware that it does not deal with the issue of Eskom. That is the first stage of us highlighting this to other authorities. We are going to meet with Eskom board on the 23rd, Friday next week. We want to deal with them about this matter. If they don't want to discipline this person who has bought these things, then we'll take it to authorities, the police or the public protector who is under siege or anyway. Yeah, that is what we'll do. What else will deal with other issues?
Good evening, honorable members. The president is taking some cue, but I'll also take some cue and give it back to him. We apologize on behalf of NUM and the president. We apologize for coming late. We were under the impression that we are attending our presentation and listening to the others for today, because the president is in Johannesburg and he had some commitment before. And we were skeptical, we thought about coming to the committee, but because we take the committee work seriously, he was forced to cancel some of the meetings that he has already committed himself to. We apologize to the committee. In addressing some of the issues, the women participating in construction. We still have difficulties, even in terms of employment equity. For women to climb the corporate ladder is still a challenge. Specifically on this issue, we would like the committee to work with the department to review the strategy and provide targets, because this is just a document that is sitting there and no one knows what to do with it. But then again, as mentioning the issue, we would like the committee to support us, or the committee, when they do their oversight into the department, to ask this question: how do you quantify the women participating in these industries? If you have a document that doesn't have a target, that doesn't have a program, because there is, currently it doesn't have a program. Violence in the mining industry and close our communities. I'm going to let our president to deal with that one in his second, and the one on health and safety issues. The corporate tax issue. I know that when it comes to paying, corporate South Africa doesn't want to cough out more money, but they are willing to fund. They are willing to budget for things like risks, health and safety, and all the other things that does not include workers in them. In this instance, when we're asking for a corporate tax in modernization program, we are specifically asking government to make this program not cheaper for them to participate on, or to just do it. We are asking for a meaningful conversation. The question that you've asked us, if a mining company or a mining boss wants to buy anywhere the machine, which is more cost effective for him. But then again, in South Africa, we do not do such things. We do not do things that we want. We don't. We do not operate individually. That's why we have in a committee or in a table. We have labor. We have business. We have community. It's because we want to be productive, all of us. We have a share in production, all of us. So a company can't just decide today I'm going to modernize or tomorrow I'm going to retrench you. It's not supposed to work that way. We're supposed to have a meaningful conversation which will all find each other. Because we understand the dynamics. We understand that there are mines that are deeper than the others, which they've been operating for billions of years, for years. And we cannot say, no, you can't move that direction. Because also we are also safeguarding the health and safety of our workers. We cannot allow workers to work in a mine that is more deeper, and they will be endangered and leave their family in the institute. So in that, we are asking for government to make the program more expensive for companies to do. Firstly, we are saying they must just regulate the program. Secondly, they must introduce a corporate tax that is aligned to a program where it makes this program very expensive for companies to just indulge. But then again, they must just, if there's such, there must be a plan and a mitigation plan that informs the stakeholders what the direction would be and how it will affect the other people within the stakeholders. I'm sure we've answered a lot more. In terms of the MPRDA, what we are saying is that reviewing a policy has financial implications. With those financial implications, the department, especially within the parliament processes, the bill went to the National Assembly Committee, which is your committee, the one that you are sitting here, and then it went
went, if you went through and you accepted it, it went to the end, the National Assembly, and it was accepted. Then it went to the selection committee. The selection committee took its own time in addressing the matters, and there were new issues that were brought into the bill, rather than addressing those that the president, the former president, had issues with in terms of ascension the bill. Then, therefore, we felt that this was such a waste of funds, waste of public funds, for a bill to just be called off into the bill roll. We had a particular interest in that bill to go through. Firstly, it was addressing the issue of Section 52 of MPRDA and aligned to Section 189 of the LRA for us as Labour. Secondly, it was addressing an issue of a demarcation, and it was giving a distinction between the municipalities where the mining companies are operating, and it was going to benefit the labour. And it was also addressing the issue of labour sending, companies investing into labour sending areas. We had a particular interest in that, and we were disappointed that none of the committee members stood there and say, because you oversee the work of the executive, and it was easy for the DMR to call off a bill that has came to you, and you didn't say anything. We felt that the powers that you have over the executive, because it was easy for you just let it go, but you were supposed to do something on that.
On the violence in mining, the help that we are calling for the committee to assist is that I said it before that during the strike at Kasi Villan Free State, where people were dying, the Minister of Police, Minister of Mines, Comrade Mantachi, and Minister Oliphant from Labour, we met them as Labour. Together with AMCO at Carlton Hill, and we raised this thing. And we said the commission must be established to probe on the syndicate that is sponsoring violence. And that's what we are asking for this committee. Because it is not yet done. Because what is very sad, it is when even children are dying who are not even working in the mine. I have said something about two children who their house was petrol bombed in the Free State, and one of those children, two children, because their father was not in the house, died. The other one is still in the ICU, even today. So the sponsors of violence must be exposed. So the parliament is the only custodian of the safety of people in the country. Hence, every state apparatus is the embodied parliament, either the soldiers or the police and so on. So, hence, we are appealing that the commission must be established to probe this thing. The other one. Oh, business as usual. What we are saying about business rescue is that we are not saying do away with business rescue. When we say they, we are referring to the business, the practitioners. These people, when they are appointed by the master of court and the company, they make a lot of money from the company, and the money that they make, they sell some assets. If there's a plant somewhere, they strip off that plant and sell assets. by doing that, they extend unemployment, because tomorrow, if anybody is interested with that particular business, they will do an audit. And when they found that a lot of things has been taken away, they will leave it. Example is road play mines in the East End, where the business has to liquidate, sell everything. Those mines will never work again. They even sell the everything, the shaft. They strip off the shaft and sell everything to emerging mines in Africa and elsewhere. So, again, these people, they stay there even more than 4 years, being a business rescue. We are saying there must be a time frame that if they are appointed, let them stay for 2 years, because their business is to rescue the business. What we have identified is that because they make a lot of money out of this thing, because they are paid, they don't want to then find an investor who can take the mine. The evidence is the mine that in Mpumalanga, Lily Mine, where there are many investors who want to take the mine. They refuse because they are making money there. You know? They refuse. So, these people, they don't care. They care for themselves and their family. They don't care for people. So, hence we are saying, let them be given, let's have a term for business rescue, term for liquidator, and there must be evaluation within 6 months. If he has not made any advances in terms of rescuing the company and bringing investors, the term must be terminated, because he is not denied to be permanent in that manner. And also on the issue of care maintenance, we are saying, if a person cannot continue to mine the mine, let him hand over the mining license to the department so that the other one can come and mine the mine. You cannot put a mine under care maintenance for 5 years, because where now you believe that you are waiting for the commodity price to go up, then you will mine that mine. You don't care about the people that are suffering. So, yeah. Thank you,
Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm.
The last one, Eskom, do you believe that Eskom is overstaffed?
Oh, okay. No, we don't believe that. This thing of Eskom being overstaffed, it emanates from Eskom shortfall of money. And we are saying the money here is paid to IPPs. The money is paid to IPPs. If you stop all the overflow of money from Eskom, you will never talk about overstaffing. And we are saying, Eskom has decided to close other operations, like your road play, power station and others, where workers can be employed in that. So there are a lot of operations which need a lot of staff. It is even short of staff, because they are closing other operations which can expand the operation. So it's not overstaffed.
Okay.
They are stealing the money.
Okay. The reason that was fine, and then you can have the answer. That was your opinion or your position. Yeah, honorable members, I'm sure. Let me say this, and you know, first on the issue of employment equity, especially when it comes to women. If this committee doesn't get it right, what you are making, you are going to make a commitment. Because the actual people who should be the custodian on the effective implementation are those who are supposed to be the beneficiaries of the law. So next time we look at that, we'll be asking that question in relation to what are the key monitors. The reason probably, let me say why, and I think our policy is accepted. Let me say why. Members felt that you came late. Because as stakeholders, there was an introduction, including the purpose of the meeting, what was to be achieved, so that when it comes to the presentation, you've got an understanding of what would have been. That is the first thing. technical part. Two unions, I must confirm now, even before it goes, two unions were invited. One has not responded. One initially responded, coming, but on the basis, that's the report I got, on the basis that if they were to be paid for. I won't mention the names. So the problem is that when you are invited, otherwise you pay for one, you have to pay for all of them. So we suspect the reason that they couldn't pitch up is because they had those challenges. We will check how fact, true the facts are, because we had waited until this morning to say they are coming. We're almost counting you also as part of those who are not coming. Let alone that you have confirmed. So that is the disadvantage that the committee was saying was. Our being here is to also develop and understand so that tomorrow, even yourselves, when you make criticism of the committee, it is based on the fact that this is what you expected the committee would do. And when it does it, or you wanted to develop channels of engaging and interacting with the committee. That's why I'm saying, on the issue of employment equity, it's going to be quite difficult if there's no relationship between those who are supposed to ensure that there's a day-to-day compliance with employment equity, including the employment of women. The reason I'm saying that is that ours is to monitor. Now, I can tell you with due respect, when your other stakeholders are coming, which is your bosses, it's going to be difficult for us sitting from this committee to dispute what they would say if we don't have an information contrast to what they are presenting. So from time to time, as a committee, we'll expect from all, especially both from labor and the employers, to say, as a manner in the way of stabilization of the industry, this is what we are doing. And I know when you do an oversight, sometimes you come there, they tell us every good thing. They never tell us one of the things that they want us. Sometimes it's a fact they don't want to tell us that, which is a real problem sometimes. That workers can just talk and talk and find that you are taking too long to resolve their problem and wake up and say we're not going to work. And it's not a nice thing because the environment is terrible. So I think that's the first issue. Be able to assist us to say, when it comes to these issues, the 12% that is presented, it leaves much to be desired. And on the basis of that, we want the committee to work with us in order to ensure that we move the threshold much more higher from where it is now. And I think it's a fact. It's quite shocking. On the DRPs, I may declare my interest. You see, some of the things we've never mentioned, we will debate it. I'm not shy. Somebody still here, since I've been here, still to sit and convince me the good work that the DRPs are doing. Somebody must convince me that is it by accident that all DRPs are liquidators? Most of them. In fact, I've not met anyone now who's a DRP who is not a liquidator. So we must look at that. And let's look at that also in terms of authority of right. I will still argue. If we say the state is the custodian of the mineral wealth beneath the soil and therefore anything that is done on behalf of the people, then it's impossible that you can have people who must suffer. It's true what you say. It's not only in your mind. You can't resolve optimum now. The problem of optimum. Who are the actual victims? I can tell you sometimes you receive SMS and say, workers have not been paid since October last year. I don't know this year. I've never heard that they were paid this year. So I'm saying we must have that discussion is going to be well and good, proper, when we engage, we will not run away. Then the issue of the empire, they know them. You must not touch. Why is innocent as nothing? We dealt with the bill. We made the amendments that were sent to us that we should have done. We argued strongly on the two substantive issues, including the issue of the B codes, including with
took it to the NCOP. We are hearing it from you for the first time. That is all what we know. There was an intention to withdraw the bill or whatever. We don't know what happened. Thanks for giving us the information that now it's no longer there. We don't know. NCOP is an independent house. They don't even have I think going to share with me, but if you know, she knows, she should have told me. We still have to look at the process then. Whether when they decide or whatever they are deciding, it has to come back to the house or what, we really don't know. The difference, again, I've always been explaining with you, the difference between that process is that the NCOP was given all white powers to deal with everything as if it's starting afresh because there was a query about the issue of public consultation. Now, when they did that, unfortunately, they are not like us. I wouldn't know what is happening, but as you have said, we take the point. The last thing I wanted to say on this thing, look, I think we must agree with your submission and so forth. We have to deal, and I'm trying to work out something that will be more structured. A proper thorough discussion on the issue of illegal mining in this country. So that, because the risk is very high that we treat illegal mining as if it's one and the same system. There is, in my view, for example, to a certain degree, part of the problem is that in order to deliver the political part of surveillance and so forth, part of the issue that we're able to deal effectively with illegal trade in diamond, it's why the whole international community has said to deal with black diamonds. And on the basis that they came to what is called today the Kimberley process, it's not easy to trade in diamond. Unfortunately, with gold, it's not something that I see when you say they were processing outside and so forth. The truth of the matter is that it's not easy with gold because gold has got no international regulation or prescription. You can't sell diamond. That's a fact. You cannot sell diamond without you being known to be trading in diamond. It's not the same thing with gold. And by the way, diamond is so prescribed to such an extent, unlike gold, because I'm sure you are running away from the truth, the things even can go to the fact that even some of those that are regulated are operating in the industry. They could be using gold that is being infused in their own production license. So it's a complex matter when it comes. And gold and coal probably is not the same. The worst thing that we have not said, so that discussion has to be broader. In Lily Mine, Babum Teja, we hope the department, they said they are putting a case. One of the dangers that were done, which is what illegal mining is sometimes all about. When you mine, particularly gold, you leave pillars. Mm-hmm. Now, in most cases, even in the Israel and whatever, part of the problem is that they are mining the pillars.
Yeah.
So we need to look at those issues much, much, much more broadly. But I think whether we like it or not, there are areas where you say, this is what they just need us to speed up how we walk. One is chrome. If you go in the form of Becker's work, when they mine chrome just behind their houses. Yeah. So the question is, isn't it maybe the problem of our licensing regime that we are having, that we might need to improve? In Newcastle, they had to move a school completely because people were digging illegal, even towards underground schools. Can you grant a person a license and regulate a license so that people can mine under the schools?
Yeah.
So some of this is as I said, but the worst thing that we have not seen, which is the point I think they were asking why to explain, it's very difficult because it's a highly criminalized, not just syndicated, highly criminalized, organized industry. They have got, I will not talk about your violence, they have got the case study of mine workers who are told, literally, we know where your wife works, we know where your kids stay, and they effect it. Once you close, so at some point, so I would bring members, we might have to put it as one of the priority areas, to go to all the different areas so that we can see what is it that really comes to the money and what are the challenges. The biggest problem is that even the captains of the law enforcement agencies, including prosecutors, they sit in that board that you say is sitting there. The information leaks there, who said what, and what is the strategy is being planned at that high level because of the money. And I once gave an example. I said there was one guy from Mtondola from Mozambique who was arrested with 20 million rand. That guy did not spend even a week in jail. The docket was lost, no one knew what was happening, and the thing was gone. It's a money-making group. Go there, you will see the amount of batteries on the helmets that they do. It's one brand, which means somebody is making a business. So, but I'm saying it will require us to broaden up, as you brought some of these issues. We brought you now, let me tell you, we brought you as unions first. Because last time when I was in that other world, I was in mineral resources, you complained that we started with the employers. Now you should have been better if, but all of you, and I'm not saying you should, all of you, you were so, they never said I'm charging. And I have never seen you, so I never clashed, never said anything. But he said, then you couldn't make an eye. I shouldn't fire what I didn't say. So, but we appreciate that you came here. We appreciate your submissions. We'll take them into consideration. As you know, it's a huge committee. Please bear with us, I must say. It's a huge committee, and it is one of the most tasked committees. I can assure you now, if we don't put enough effort, there is no way the economy of this country will go anywhere if we don't sort out our energy challenges. That's the fundamental. Secondly, if we don't address the issue of our commodity issues, it still remains an issue. We are a risk in a committee that deals with risk factors. Like you have seen in the Buruleni, when a child went through an old pit and was never found, it's not the only case. But I was only worried about one thing, and I know maybe the employers will say, but it would have been nice to hear you, what do you say about our licensing regime and the issues that lead to the closure of the mine. Because some of those issues, but we will hear them. But you gave us very much, and I think we need to appreciate even the effort, not just to appear in front of the committee, the effort to put something that will remain with us for a longer time. So it's not a wasted time. As this committee was prepared to hit the ground running, let me just share this with you. You will tell your other friend next week. We are off to Gauteng. We are visiting now the entities that are under the government. So that as we meet as a committee, you don't talk about SAF, you don't even know what is the SAF, what type of maybe the SAF you think is SAF. So we want now to say this is so and so, this is so and so. We'll be asking some of the questions on the matter that you raised. Yes, I must say I understand the limitations that you have, so is with the committee. But we won't take what you said. We take it as your views. Go and tell the powers that may be. For now, ESCOM, unfortunately, is still under public enterprise. It's not our choice. We take what you are given. But the truth is, it's still very complex to us. When you take ESCOM, whether you say it is so difficult to limit people, because at the end of the day, the output of whatever happens in energy rests with ESCOM. That is the most regrettable thing. It's not that. Honorable members, we're supposed to, I'm speaking to my secretary, she seemed to agree with me that
I must go and plead with the House Chairperson to grant us an extension. It doesn't mean it's going to be granted. To grant us an extension to deal with the legacy reports of both minerals and energy. Unfortunately, unlike you, President, and others, she will just have to accept what I say, whether she agrees or she doesn't agree. As politicians, we take decisions. The duty is to process them. Then we will talk when we are supposed to process them. I think let me put it in the past. Let's meet each other at 10. We would have loved to start at 9, honorable members, but when we started here, you can see there is a lot of work that was done in time. We hope it's fruitful expenditure. There is more to a lot of work that is being done, so there is a meeting here of the NCOP at 9. So then we have to take 10 of them. But I hope we will be a little bit faster tomorrow. But for the whole information, we are finishing at 8. We are finishing at 8. If you still continue, we'll finish it at 10. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow.
You still need to give me the list.
Can I get the details of your colleague?
My
phone is off.
My fear is that if you follow that route, and
the majority of you, am I in red?
It might be infringing on your right. So my advice in the meantime,
my phone number is
0661-333-760 on the ruling that I made, and members. To refer the matter, that's what I'm saying now, to your chief whip. Let the chief whip can ask probably for the audio or directly lay the objection with the speaker, and then it will be taken from there. We'll get the right. But if anything happens as an advice, I will still come back. Thank you very much.
PMG. PMG. Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.